Blog Talk Radio.
Python Radio, brought to you by Morelia Python's forums, www.moreliapythons.com. I have a question for everybody. Owen, if I were a herper and I could go on a vacation, where would I go? Would I go somewhere where it was warm and hot, or somewhere where it was cold? Where are you going, Owen?
I, for one, being the new age herper, I'm going to Alaska. Yeah.
Very cool, very cool. This will be the, you won't be here next week. It will be, Owen. Owen will be up in the cold, cold Alaska.
Hunting and for gold and polar bears.
Very cool.
I have a very big suitcase. You could probably fit in it.
I don't know. I don't know. I have been dieting, but I don't know. we timed this out pretty well, me and you, this season. My eggs are about to hatch in your incubator while you're away.
Yes.
And your
yes.
eggs are going to hatch while you're away.
Yes.
Then my other eggs are going to be laid while we're at
yes.
Carpet Fest.
Yes.
And then on my
so
vacation, my eggs are going to hatch from my zebra head albino girl.
So far we're doing freaking great.
Yeah, we've timed it perfect.
Yeah, you could potentially be the first person to see the super caramel jags when they hatch over here. And I could potentially be the person to see your zebra tiger, the zebra...
Albino
zebra jag. That's it. Yeah.
The
fucking goddamn it. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I could potentially be the albino zebra jag seer for the first time, which you know.
Yeah. Which is cool. I mean, you know, you'll be. You'll say that until you see them. I'm sure.
It sucks because it's like, listen, I want to see my projects come to fruition, and you want to see your projects come to fruition. Yes, I'm going to enjoy checking out the babies. They look awesome. It's like when I saw your zebra jags hatch over here. It was cool, but it means more to you. I mean,
yeah, I know.
You know. I'm going to see your poison ivy IJs hatch, not the things I really want to see to hatch out of my incubator. Okay. They're going to be cool, but you know, I want to see my stuff hatch.
Right. The it's funny. It's like when I started to breed, you never think about these things way down the road. You know, you raise them up, you feed them. You know, you finally get to the stage where you can breed them. You go through the whole breeding season. You finally get eggs. Now you're waiting for them to hatch, and you're not going to be there. just sucks. But what are you going to do? So, I don't know if we really have a whole lot of anything to get to before we get on, except for Carpet Fest. But tonight, we're talking Conjures and Carpets. We're joined by Gary Schivino, yeah. And he has a new website. I'm just going to throw it out there before we bring him on, but it's www.gsreptiles.com. In the meantime, we're going to talk about Carpet Fest real quick. Tomorrow, the last day that you can get your I think, isn't it the last day for the shirt, too, or is that today?
It is. It is the last day for the shirt, I believe. I'm going to check on that right now. So, stall. Say
okay.
Something. Sing.
So the, yeah, right.
Do something, so goddammit.
The auction that we're doing for, you know, that we're trying to raise money, is going to be closing tomorrow, so I can get everything together, and we're going to put it up on the Northeast Carpet Fest Facebook page, so that everybody has a week over the internet if they wanted to bid on some items.
Yeah,
we got some pretty cool items. I know Buddy, he's donating a chondro.
Male or female. It's important.
It doesn't matter.
I can bid on a female. I can't get another boy.
It doesn't matter. It's your pick. You can pick whatever.
Oh, my God. Oh, shit. Oh, done. Done.
Let me just get the clutch here. It's from his Highland and Calico Outcross pairing.
Done. Doing it. Done. Done. Bidden. Mine. All y'all can go to hell.
Uh-oh. The purchaser gets to select their Neo and... he'll cover shipping once they're ready to ship. So that's pretty cool.
Damn.
I know Rob Stone, he donated a gift card to what he has going on. You know, and it's kind of cool because it's early in the season. Well, you know, not a lot of people have stuff that's hatched out or ready for sale or anything like that.
Yes,
so.
But like, go to any one of these people's websites, and you can see what they could potentially have or what's going on. So, it's very cool. Oh, here, looking at the booster, you have exactly 27 hours left to before the booster closes. We have sold 28 shirts and have raised $390 for Rico.
Okay. Awesome.
That's fantastic. We are a little shy of the goal of 75 T-shirts.
Yep.
And I still don't see a lot of the names of people who were complaining about how they couldn't order the T-shirt. So when the booster closes, if you email me, I will not be kind. I'm not going to be nice to you. I've had it with you people. So if you want a T-shirt, log on. Go get the T-shirt. Once they arrive here, we will negotiate shipping. I'll send it out to you. It's going to be the cheapest form of shipping to you. If you are international, Australia, other places, go to the booster, order your shirt, pay for it, let me know, and it'll be sent to my house, and I will talk to you about shipping. We can do customs. It's usually about $15 to have it sent from me here in the United States to you, wherever it is you are. So we can do that. A lot of people have been buying from Australia, so other countries are certainly, we can certainly do that too, but you still have to go to the booster. Sending me an email and saying, I'll take four, does not help you. It will not get you it. You will not get a T-shirt. You have to go follow the link. We're all adults. I'm pretty sure you can do this. Go follow the link, buy the T-shirt. If you have any issues, if the booster doesn't let you go through with anything, if it wants some sort of American address, contact me. I will give you my address, my phone number, everything you need, except my money. You have to pay for it yourself, okay?
There you go.
You have 27 hours. Go.
So, it's just for so everybody knows, it's May 17th. It's in Waldorf, Maryland. Carpetfest, and it's hosted by our good friend Howard Redding of Redding mm-hmm. Reptile Breeders, and should be a good time. So
and if you're coming, contact me with what food you are bringing so I can mark you down. Do not just show up with whatever food you think you should bring. Contact us, let us know. Also, if you want to donate to the auction, time is limited, so let us know about that too.
Yeah, that's tomorrow it closes, so if you don't get it to
late
me by
comers
tomorrow.
And late emailers will be flogged publicly at Carpetfest. that's just what we're going to have to do now.
Yeah. And, you know, like Owen said, it's for a good cause. We're donating money to RICO and to US ARC. And, you know, so get a cool animal, get a cool, you know, like Howard, he donated. Did you see that thing he donated? He donated
the probe kit.
Probe kit? Man.
Yeah.
You know,
a
that's
really
kind
nice
of
probe kit.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah.
You see that? So,
yeah.
You know, those are the kind of things. And you know how we carpet guys are notorious for missexing our snakes, so.
Very much.
Yeah.
I'm going to go get a whale vertebra up in Alaska, like a bone from a whale the size of you, and I'll bring it to Carpetfest to auction. So.
There you go.
I just want to see the look on Howard's face when it, like, arrives at his house via crate. So.
What the hell is this?
It's just like keep for Carpetfest. Yeah, done.
Yeah.
Happening. So,
I mean, that's really, really. Oh, I don't know if you have anything else going on. I'm just waiting for some eggs.
I'm waiting for some eggs, and there's a very slight chance that my super caramel jacks are going to hatch before I leave. Just because the condensation in the den thing just tells me we're close. And they're due on the 5th. I've never willed snakes to come out of their eggs more than I am these babies because it's like, please, just, and I already know what's going to happen. I'm going to come downstairs to the snake room on Thursday morning at like 3:30 in the morning before I leave for the airport just to check on everybody, and I'll see something pipping, and then I'll want to die. Then I'll just be like, what the hell is this? Because that's how it always happens. That's how it's going to happen. So,
you know, it's funny you say that because it was last week when that girl laid, the zebrahead albino, I woke up early in the morning. I was kind of running late for work a little bit, and then I go into the snake room, not even thinking that they would be there that day because it kind of came a week early, and I was like, ah, son of a bitch.
And it's always like the day before you were doing nothing and sitting around the house all day and didn't have anything to do, and you checked on her like 5 times, and no, it's always the following day when you're like, I gotta go. Oh, shit, I left my keys in the snake room. Walk downstairs. Oh, son of a bitch. And it's,
the joys of being a snake keeper. But when we get Gary on here, it was funny, before the show we were talking about Martin's Aquarium, and and only people from our area would understand what that is, but you know, I remember when way back in the day when I got my first real snake, and that's where they all came from, and I got a rat snake first, and then I got some cash from my grandmother. I think she got her taxes or hit the lotto or something, so she gave us all money. And I went around, I remember going in there, and you remember how they had the tanks on the one side in the reptile spot, and then they had, like, those wooden cages that they built on the other? Well, they had, like, Burmese pythons popping out of the egg, and here I am. I was, like, I don't know, 12.
Yeah.
And I went in there, and I'm like, yeah, I want one of them. They look cool. And, that's what I got. And then that snake grew to be 18 and a half feet. Holy shit, that was a big snake.
Yeah.
But
the Martin's Aquarium was fun because unsupervised, I used to just, like, muck with the baby alligators. And, you know, that should never have happened. And being that my high school and elementary school was so close to Martin's Aquarium, you always had the stories of that one kid in the school that their parents let them get one of the cool animals from Martin's Aquarium. Like, there was that one kid who actually had the baby alligator, or there was one girl who used to keep brat pups in this bag in class and used to bottle feed them when no one was looking. I mean, there's all that kind of stuff running around Chinatown High School until Martin's Aquarium closed. The unfortunate part is that I wasn't huge into the reptile thing before Martin's closed. So I never really got to go in there as a reptile, like, enthusiast or wanting to buy the reptiles. I just wanted to play with the baby alligators because I thought they were cool, and I used to go in there and look at all the animals. So it was kind of like I missed it by, like, that much, but it would have been cool.
Yeah, that was kind of like, you know, it was like, actually, so, at some point, you know, I thought it was cooler than going to the zoo, I guess, because when I was a little kid, you know, it's like when you went there, you were seeing these species that you wouldn't see at the zoo. And, you know, it was just like, it was just a whole different experience. But
yeah, and,
of
and
course,
they do frown on you petting the animals at the zoo. I mean,
and
they don't let you do that.
Like, I guess it was like a whole nother, I don't know. It was a whole different experience. And I guess looking at it through kids' eyes, it's completely different. Then I remember my dad, after that place closed, there was another pet shop, and I'm not going to say what it was, but there was it was when my dad got big time into snakes, and it was in the area. But we would go there, and in the reptile room, they would have, like, you know, the regular reptiles, similar to, like, what Martin's Aquarium had. But then they had a back room, and in the back room is where they kept all the venomous stuff. And
Pennsylvania.
Now that I know about the reptile stuff, you know, it's kind of shady. But back then, I was like, oh, this is where the elite people go. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah. This is where the venomous are. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, now I'd be like, what? Yeah.
But, oh, boy, what are you going to do? Good times. Anyway, enough of us jabbing. Let's get Gary on here and let's get this going. Hey, Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey, Eric and Ellen, how are you guys doing?
We're doing all right.
Eric, did I hear that right? Did you rob money from your grandmother to buy a Burmese python?
Yes, that's what I heard. That is exactly what I heard.
That is true.
That is what it will be now for the rest of our lives. Eric stole money from his poor grandmother to buy a berm.
Do you guys find that that first snake that you had, that you will always have, like, this fascination with, that snake that you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to watch my Calcum eat.
Like, it used to be a two-hour event of, like, feeding him and watching him eat the thing and being totally obsessed with him when he shed. Now it's just like, here's your food. I'll be back later. I mean, you know, it was... Oh, yeah, I remember with my girlfriend at the time being in my college dorm room, letting the king snake out, and he would cruise around and then feeding him in the middle of the floor and, like, totally obsessing with him eating it for the first time. It was insane. But, like I said, like, right now it's, you know, throw the animal its food and then come back later to clean up when it's, you know, past it. So,
No, it was the same with me. It was a Burmese python. It's like my brother smuggled it into the house for me. It was like 9 or 10 years old. I knew what the hell it was, how to take care of it, you know. And but you're right. Every time I see a berm, it's like still to this day, just my most favorite animal. If they didn't get so damn big, that's what I would absolutely be keeping. So but yeah, that was a long time ago. And like in preparation to speak with you guys tonight, I was actually looking at. I actually wrote down from like 1984, like every snake I ever bought and stuff. And I was thinking, wow, it's like 27 years since I bought my first carpet python. Like, my first conjure I bought 21 years ago, and I'm thinking, just goddamn, am I getting old, man. It's ridiculous, you know? It was actually very depressing preparing to speak with you. Thanks for that. So,
I'm glad we could take you down this wonderful memory lane and horribly depress you, but, you know. Jeez.
Owen, you should be proud, though. You said you had a girlfriend. You're like the only snake I know who was like in his teens and had a girlfriend at that time. I had a girlfriend.
I was in college, and I seem to keep getting lucky with having them show up and not minding or embracing the reptiles. But, you know, we shall see.
As long as no money exchanged hands, Eric.
Oh,
and that's all.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, moving on. Well, Gary, why don't we just jump into it, and why don't you tell us what got you started into reptiles? You know, I kind of like the story with your brother smuggling in a Burmese python. Seems to be a good place to start.
It's so amazing. I think about it, like, you know, so I'm 46 years old, and just thinking about this stuff, it's so clear to me. My brother was coming home with, like, a 10-gallon fish tank on his bicycle, and I just remember my mother freaking out, saying, what the hell is that for? And he said that I found a place where I could catch water snakes, and my mother's like, there's no way you're ever bringing a snake in this house, but, you know, my brother's 6 years older than me. So my older brother, you look up to your older brother, right? It's the coolest thing. So I'm thinking, older brother thinks these snakes are cool. I knew nothing about it. That was the first seed ever put into my head. I don't know why it just resonated with me and stuck there, but I'm thinking, hey, if my brother had Aerosmith albums at the time and Fog had albums, he must know something about other things too, you know? So that was it. I was tough. And then that was 1974, and from that point on, I just, you know, I went out. I got my first book, like one of those typical TFH books, you know, all about boas and other snakes that were like, I don't know, every photo was like mislabeled, you know, it was just ridiculous. Like, have a picture of a green anaconda. It was, like I said, Siamese cat underneath it or something, you know, it was just ridiculous. And that was it. I mean, that's how it started in 1974. 1984, I got my first snake. And I think, honestly, in the past 30 years and thinking about it, I don't think I've ever did not have a snake for the past, like, 31 years in that area. So, and as you guys were talking about earlier, growing up in, you guys grew up in, I guess, in Pennsylvania. I was in New Jersey. But Martin's Aquarium is where I went. That was it. Every weekend I was at Martin's Aquarium. And I was blown away that this pet store had a shopping cart. You could bring a shopping cart into this pet store. And that's how people don't understand how big Martin's Aquarium. I guess it was an old A&P Owen or something like that? It was like an old...
It was a big store, if I remember correctly. Of course, you know, I was in sixth grade when I used to run down there. And, I mean, you know, I think they were closed by the time I hit high school. So, but it was a big store, and there were always rumors of an upstairs where they kept, like, leopards or something like that. So, you know, but it was a big store, and the things that fill it now, I think it's a furniture store now or something along those lines. Yeah, so I also think that they divided up the building itself, and now there's, like, two tenants in it or something like that. So, yeah, it was a big, big store, and they sold everything from puppies to bunnies to chickens to gators to some of the weirdest-looking reptiles I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, now I know what those are. So.
Yeah. I'm older than you guys, I think, and, you know, so what you missed out on was right before you hit Martin's Aquarium. I don't know if you know the name Jay Jacoby. Jay's a big-time carpet guy from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and he opened up a store right next to Martin's Aquarium, and then... And then there was a guy, Hank Moult. I don't know if you know that name. He had the store before Jay. So just, you know, we were so ruined. We were so spoiled because we saw stuff here, you know, growing up. I was 17 years old seeing stuff I wouldn't even see in zoos at that time. So, I was just hooked. I really couldn't tell you exactly, you know, ever just what it was about seeing that first, you know, thinking about getting that first snake. But that's it. It ruined me. I wish I'd put all this energy and thought into something else. I could have, like, I don't know, created, like, a rock or some kind of, you know, use my powers for good, you know?
If only I'd use this space in my mind for math, that'd be great.
Got it. Yeah. And
sorry.
Then, you know, then for me, honestly, and then, you know, just always had stuff that whole time, just always had animals. And then in 95, right, the internet pretty much hit. I mean, it was around before that, before it became, you know, really user-friendly to the public and just, you know, just meeting new people then and just... You know, connecting with guys like Rico Walder and you know, Greg Maxwell, seeing these names. Now I was speaking with guys outside of Jersey, outside of Pennsylvania, outside of Maryland. And, from there, it just, you know, eat, sleep, and drink snake. That's what it became, you know. So, but I do give those guys a lot of credit, guys like, you know, especially like a Trooper Walsh, who, you know, suddenly I never even heard that name before. You come to find out that he pretty much was doing stuff with chondros. You know, long before I even knew what the helichondra was, you know, he really was a trailblazer and shared a lot of information. And then guys like Greg Maxwell came along and showed that, hey, not only can you, you know, you can breed these things, and not only can you breed them, but you can actually, there's a market for them, there's a big market for them. You can actually sell them, you can actually pay for your hobby, and more importantly, you could sell them and buy more snakes, because that's what every snake guy wants, right? We just want to make money, and so we could buy
exactly.
More snakes.
Get more, yeah, pay for the rats and get more.
just that, yeah, it's just that rotation of cash from one, you know, just from out of your pocket into for more snakes. And then, yeah, guys, obviously, then like a Rico Walder, a guy like that who just always just so knowledgeable, always shared information. Just I called Rico more times than I can remember in a panic, just whether it was whatever the issue was, couldn't get an animal feeding, you know, respiratory infection. So all these things over the last 30 years were just a recipe that here I sit 46 years old and just as into it as I was when I was 10 years old, you know. So I love it. And I never get bored of it. That's the scary part, so.
Not supposed to get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, how many guys that we know, though, right? We know so many people who get into it and then they kind of get burnt out. And when I think back, I always think that for me, I think the key was always keeping my numbers lower. You know, I mean, that doesn't work for everybody, but for me, it's like I know once I hit that 35, 40 animal mark, it's like it starts to become a little bit of a chore. And when you have that many animals, you always have usually at least one animal with a respiratory or something going on, and it's kind of a buzzkill. So I think back with my longevity and just, you know, staying in the game, I just think it was, you know, kind of trying to stay focused, which is always difficult, as you guys know, because you have a certain list in your head of what you want to keep and what you want to breed, and you walk into a snake show, and it's like, wow, what is that called, a Plumifrons basculus? You know what I mean? And suddenly a lizard that had no intention of it, so... trying to do my best to stay focused, which I usually failed at, and keeping my numbers low, and I think that's kind of what kept me in, but I don't know, you know. Like I said, it's just as I just get stronger all the time, so. But pretty much I'm just Borrelia guys at this point, just chondros and carpets, and both you guys keep chondros as well, right?
I do. Eric got rid of his.
That's right, Eric got rid of his, okay.
Yeah, I have to say that because he did. And I had to make him feel guilty. So
right.
Yeah. Well, Gary, just so you know the story, and everybody knows the story, there was I had a Biak female that I got at the first Carpet Fest, which
the
is
very first one.
Yeah, it is a beautiful animal, and I probably regret getting rid of that one for the rest of my life. But
was it a baby or was it? You said it was a female, so it's a larger animal already.
Yeah, and. She'll probably stay. She was from Buddy, and she'll probably stay, I would say, maybe 85% yellow, maybe even 90% yellow. Anyway, I traded it for a red tiger that I had to have. I mean, this snake is beautiful, and it fits so perfect into the projects that I was working with, and I kept it with somebody. I traded it to Zach Baez, and he lives very close as well, so I know when he goes and produces babies, I'll be able to get some from him, you know, so it's kind of like,
he kept it in the family, so it's okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you know, I do more breeding now than brokering, but for the last, you know, whatever, 20 years, I really have done a lot more brokering than breeding, and trust me. So many times now, I'm just so sorry. I see an animal somebody posted. I'm like, where the hell did you get that from? He's like, you idiot. You know, that was, I got it like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And it's,
damn it. Yeah.
Well, that's the problem with Morelia, right, is like chondros and carpets, because you get a baby, you're not sure what the hell it's going to look like. You wind up selling it. And that's why, honestly, I'm such a hoarder at this point. Every one of my babies just hold back. I keep everything back for a year just so I can kind of prevent that from happening. But
Eric just did that to me for the first time. This year with a caramel tiger that I sold him. Because I'm like, here, you can have this one, because I'm going to hold this one back. And the holdback did not come out the way I thought it was going to be, and the one that he got is, like, phenomenal. And I'm like, a son of a bitch. So I'm kind of, that's when I kick myself on. But so the current species that you are working with is just Morelia, or do you have other species?
Yeah, that's it for me. You know, just carpets, and again, it's a pretty small group of carpets. It's just primarily, I'm big into, I love the Diamond Jungle Jaguars. That's just definitely what I'm, just, that's my, you know, without a doubt, my favorite. Just, I just love that bright yellow and that dark black, and just to outcross some of that stuff, I have a Gary Val Diamond, and I have an albino, a male that I plan on breeding into the Jaguar line, into the that gamma line of Jaguars. I'm hoping to produce like an albino gamma down the road. I know there's a lot of albino Jaguar carpets out there, but just none I've been overly impressed with. I mean, they're beautiful animals, but I'm just, I always say, like, I'd love to get that albino form of the gamma line and just see how bright I can get one of those things. That's what I'm shooting for down the road. Mm-hmm. But, no, I mean, I've kept it all in the past, guys. I mean, for, you know, berms and Childrenae and whatever, Conicus sand boas and granite spotted and Wilmas and Sanzinia, had it all. But I find that my ADD kicks in, and when I get things that are already changed and are never going to look any different, I get bored. But, yeah, when I get any type of carp or chondro and I know it's going to be changing for the next 2 years, you know, mm-hmm. I could just stare at it and every day come down, and it just looks a little different, and that seems to be what keeps my interest. And trust me, it'll happen again. I'll go to a show, I'll see something, and I'll say, you know what, let me get that, and then within 6 months you'll see it posted on Kingsmake. Like, what the mm-hmm. hell was I thinking, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes you just get intrigued with what's in front of you. I mean, I know for a little bit I'm like, Amazon tree boas are kind of cool, but I'm like, no, don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah.
Now, we should almost have, like they have in, like, Alcoholics Anonymous, they have, like, a sponsor. That's what we should do. I'm standing in front of the scaleless, you know, bearded dragon enclosure right now, guys. I'm getting my money out, you know, talk me out of it.
Don't do it, Gary. Don't. You work so hard.
Hey,
I mean,
the
latest
drag.
You've had your 30-day pin for 8 minutes. So,
that's it.
You know, we can do that.
They start out pretty and they get ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, that could go. All right.
Yeah. But that's also the fun part, because remember when you were a kid, you had to ask your parents for, can I get another snake? So now as an adult, there's no
nobody stops me.
You just buy it, and now I find myself telling my daughter, she's six, you know, no guinea pig. She wants a guinea pig, and I find myself sounding like my parents now. So I know one that tells me one thing. In the next few years, she's going to be, like, begging or sneaking a guinea pig into the house. You know? I did.
Yeah, might as well just, as long as you're ready for it. At this point. So.
Is anybody ever ready for a guinea pig, Owen? I don't think so. I'm not sure.
No, but the problem, the last thing is, my mother got us a guinea pig, and then it had babies, so we were prepared for one guinea pig, not four, and that kind of threw a wrench in a lot of the works there, so, you know, I'm just getting a boy guinea pig.
You go. I think it's just, you know, I'm at a stage where I love animals, and I love keeping the you know, all the snakes, and I just, you know, and I do love that, but as far as anything with fur and or wings, you know, anything with four legs at this point, I just don't want to take care of stuff anymore, you know? But that's really what's happening to me.
Yeah.
So I have to talk her into, like, a piebald or something, so.
There you go. Like anything. My pet eats once a week. Done. So Gary, you said that you currently launched a new website. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, you know, I did a website because after, you know, all these years of just selling stuff on kingsnake.com, it's just, you know, it's a funny thing with a website. It's like the new business card. It kind of gives you instant credibility. It's like it doesn't matter what it is. Like, see, people see you with the website. They, you know, it's like it could be like snakemites.com. Like, wow, well, he's got to be legit. He's got a website, you know.
Oh, God.
It's nice because people ask me for pictures all the time, my breeding stock, they ask about payment plans, they ask about my live arrival guarantee, so now it's just like, here's my address, and go check it out, and so I'm trying to stay disciplined with it, because as you guys know, and you guys have, you know, pretty nice sites, both your sites, I mean, blow mine away, mine's just static and small, but I'm going to really try hard to keep it updated, because I know it's how frustrating it is to go check out a website, especially being, you know, the snake geeks that we are. We love going to websites just randomly, and what's new, and there's nothing worse when you see, like, you know, the snake hatched, and they're showing a picture, it's like 1987 or something, you know. But just try to stay on top of that. I just got that up in the last 3 weeks, and people seem to like it. They left, you know, I'm getting a lot of random hits for, you know, it's always funny how people find you, you know, so. Mm.
Yeah,
but,
it is, and they know all about you when they call. So.
Yeah, they really do. It's kind of creepy. But the facility, you know, the room itself, my setup's pretty small. I don't know if you guys had a chance to go to the website, but it's small. I wish I absolutely do have regrets. Two things I wish anybody listening out there, when you're building your snake room, A, go bigger than you think you're going to have to go, and a dishwasher in. That's the one thing I don't have. Do you guys have dishwashers?
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
No. That would be
Eric,
nice.
You have one?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the
that
one
would...
thing I would
that makes cleaning bowls and stuff to super simple, right? Is that the idea?
I wish I spend more time cleaning bowls than cleaning cages, honestly. So, and that would be the one thing. But yeah, I use old, you know, boulophile cages and the PVC cages for my arboreal stuff from Jim Sharphorn. And you know, it's pretty easy. So I use the Nature Spirit incubator, so it's just like the eggs come out of the incubator, boom, to the shoebox rack, to then to the 12-quart containers, and then from that point, you know, Morelia, I'm sexing them at a year old and selling them at that point. Anything I keep at that point goes into the, you know, the adult cages. But again, I am definitely running out of room, so I got to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm either going to have to move out of the room or just try to get more enclosed. You know, it's just same thing we all deal with, right? Because you just want to keep holding stuff back, and so that's what I'm dealing with right now. So, yeah, never seems to end. It's the fun of it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how, like, all of a sudden everything changes once you start breeding. You know, like, these past years, since, like, 2008, I've just been building up my collection, and now it's like, okay, I finally breed, and now I'm holding back. I'm not really buying anything so much. Well, that's not true, but
yeah, it's a lie.
Yeah, but
just don't
let
it
hurt.
You'll feel better.
But you're producing your own stuff. You're producing holdbacks and things like this. You're not buying a lot of things that update your collection, because some of them you're just breeding yourself.
Because, I mean, nothing's worse than showing somebody a picture of an outrageous animal you produced in somebody else's collection, you know. It was, like, anticlimactic, you know.
Yeah. Look at this great thing that isn't mine.
Yeah,
so
it's in Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, here's my holdback, yeah, it's in Iowa.
Go on. So.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of your on your site of your facility, and, yeah, I was quite impressed. I always like that clean... I don't know. It seems like with Morelia people, probably more so with Chondro people, but it's very, like, meticulous the way everything is laid out, and it's very impressive. Very impressive.
I'm a sick man, Eric. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
Right? Let's just not pull any punches here. Everything has to
be. Call it AVD, yeah.
It has to be black. It all, like, I called up the Nature Spirit people incubators. I'm like, can you make it in black for me? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. So, but now the problem is when I go to expand, I have to try to make everything to match, or something, you know, something bad might happen. So I have to work through that at some point.
Yeah.
I think that's my biggest fear with, you know, trying to decide on, a particular type of caging or whatever, you know, because now I'm moving into the caging phase, and it's like, do I want this? Do I want that? And then I'm like, if I buy this, then, you know, is this the cage I'm going to go with for the whole time? And I keep just putting it off and putting it off. And then I'm going to build my own, because then at least I have control of it. And, oh, man.
You know, every snake I know, honestly, we call that analyze to paralyze. We look at these cages over and over. We go to the shows. We think about, you know, we want to build them better and stronger, and the reality is just take the plunge and buy whatever cage you're going to be, and you're going to like
it. Buy the damn cages, they're fine, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. When you think about it, it's like, it's just a box, man. It's a box.
Yeah.
You know, it
should be able to handle this.
Yeah. I know you can do it. I have faith in you, Eric. I know you're going to get this done. Yeah, just go, you're mostly keeping carpets, right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So do you have racks now, or you actually use, you have racks now? You're thinking about going to cages, or?
Yeah, I have. I use mostly racks. I have, like, a lot of the racks that I built. Nothing is the same, and you know what I mean. So it's kind of like it's time to upgrade, and you know, once I'm decided on this is where I'm gonna go, then all of a sudden, you know, and this show doesn't help because each week I'm talking to somebody new. And, you know, they're telling me what they use, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's actually a really good idea. And then I get my mind all twisted again. So I'm just going to have to take the plunge, like you said, and get it done. That's what Owen finally did last year, right?
Yeah, we decided 2 years ago, I think, some of that. But, yeah, we just were like, well, you know what, screw it, let's just go. Chris and I just kind of went through everything and thought about what would work best for our situation and who has the best cages. And We found someone in Maryland who was willing to make them and then also custom make them so we could get the, you know, as many cages as we could in our small little area. So it worked out pretty well, and we've been very happy with our cages. So, but we need a bigger room now.
That's what happens. The one thing I'll tell you, Eric, since you didn't buy your cages yet, as I get older, the one thing I don't want to do is be kneeling down all the way now to, you know, bending on the floor for low cage. So, and my new rule is I don't get any cage that doesn't start up at least 18 inches off the ground. So,
there you go.
And I don't like being my cages are 5 high, and they should really stop 4 high because they're I have to get on a stool to go up and get them. And normally I'll put my nicer snakes up really high, but every once in a while, even a nice snake has a bad day, so it's kind of hard to be on a stool wrangling a, you know.
Can I come over when you get some of those? Carpet. Can I come over when you put some of those white-lip pythons, Owen, on the top cages? And
I'm looking at the white lips right now, and I have to clean them tonight, so, you know,
they're
ready. They know what's coming, so.
I got a pair of white Mark Bell probably 15, 16 years ago babies. I'm telling you, they were the nastiest little snakes I ever had. I think I had them for 3 weeks. So.
We have one nice white lip, and that's our female that we got from Nick Mutton, and she's a doll. Everything else here I hate.
Yeah.
And they hate me in turn, so it's okay. So,
I mean, they really, their intention is to really hurt you, you know? So,
oh, yeah. And our golds are 10 feet long, so.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I hear that southern race is even worse. The black ones, I hear, they're even like, they make from what I understand, I remember Tom Kiogan used to tell me that, like that southern form, those black animals are just like, they make the regular
psychotic.
White.
They're rockets with teeth. So, but they're going to be Chris's problem soon. So, they're going to go back to Chris, and I won't have to deal with them. So, yep.
So, what is it? Exactly. So, yeah, the scrubs that I keep. The other day, Owen, when I was going to bring the your girl back. I was like, I'm trying to wrangle her, and, you know, it was earlier in the day, I'm cleaning my carpets, and I'm like, oh, this is so great, I take it out, I look at the snake, I got no problems, don't even need a hook, nothing, you know, oh, this is what it's all about, I look at the snake, you know, put it back, same with when I had the chondros, you know, it's simple, nothing too crazy, nothing's going to eat my face off, you know. Now I go to pick up this thing, it's wrapping around the, you know, the lights in the room and the dog's barking.
Oh,
and, like, oh my God.
it's over.
It's pissing all over me. I'm like, what the hell am I thinking with this shit, man? I mean, come on, really?
You know what,
Chris, for making me do this crap. Yeah.
You know, no matter how many times we've been bitten in our lives, let's face it, it sucks getting bit. And I still scream like a little girl every time it happens, and it's just not pretty.
Yeah.
And
I have a couple
sucks no matter
now.
The size of the snake. After a certain point, it just sucks because I got one of my yearlings missed his rat Sunday and wrapped around my hand, my fingers. He got my ring finger and my pinky finger in his mouth and then wrapped around my other fingers. And he was squeezing and nipping, and I'm like, this actually hurts. Like, ow. Like, this is the first time now where it's like kids, they've gotten to that age now where they actually hurt if they get you in the right area. And the tips of the fingers, I hate knuckle bites and the tips of my fingers. So.
Yep. They seem to know exactly where to hit you, too. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Little bastards.
So with chondros, Gary, in all the years that you've been working with chondros, what's the one thing that you've learned about them or stands out about them about keeping chondros?
The thing I'll tell you is no matter how many perches you put in a chondro enclosure, I don't care if you put one or 20, they always go to the highest branch. They just always go to the highest branch, and that's where they tend to sit. And, you know, I always say they always go to the highest branch and the coolest area in the enclosure. So that's the one thing I've always learned about them. So you almost have to, you know, that's what, that's, if you have, you know, pretty large enclosure, you just have to make sure you have some type of heat source if you're going to have some really high purchase, because just for security reasons, that's the one thing I always, that's the one common denominator. They love to climb, so.
Huh, interesting. Why do you think that is? Like, what?
I think it's a security thing. You know, they can't get to a tree and, you know, in a canopy in captivity, so I think their default is just to get to that highest branch. You know, even in my enclosures, I keep my males in 24-inch cubes, basically, and my females are in 36-inch enclosures. And even, you know, no matter, but even if it was 6-foot enclosures, they just try to get as far from that heat as possible as well. So it kind of goes against everything we always say. You know, if you look at any book, it always says you keep chondros 85, 86 degrees. But the reality is that they're going to get away from 85 and 86, I think, is just too hot. And I think that, you know, in my opinion, I think that my max temps in any of my enclosures is like 84.5 degrees. And even then, they're not under the heat. They're not under the radiant paddles. They're trying to get to that 80 to 81 degree, you know. So it's tough to tell because, obviously, it's a small enclosure and I don't have the luxury of having some huge room with different elevations and different heating sources. So, but based on just what I keep stuff in over the years, I can tell you they just want to get away from the heat.
Right.
So,
do you keep like an ambient heat in your room, or are you just the heat?
My
in the
room
cage?
Is my room never goes below 72 degrees. Really, it's tough for me to get my room below that. And all my enclosures, I mean, my carpets. You know, on my carpets, I have belly heat, and I'll keep the belly heat at about 85 degrees, 86 degrees. And I find I put like a half log on top of the belly heat, and they seem to always perch up there where the temp will be about 83, 84 degrees. With the chondros, the radiant heat panels, again, just, you know, keep it at 84.5 degrees, and they're always, but they always stay on that 81, 82 degree side. So okay. Do you guys find that with your carpets, always trying to kind of get away from the heat?
They kind of do, but more often than not, they will stay kind of in the middle and kind of lean or adjust a little bit, whichever way they please.
You find that they'll always go underneath the hide spot, you know, even if you put the hide spot in the cool area or the warm area, wherever it is, they're going to be under that hide spot?
Usually. I mean, and my guys actually sit on top of the hide boxes and sleep up there sometimes. But they usually stick to the warm side, and then they'll go over and get a drink from the water that I keep on the cool side and go right back over.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, with mine, the only time mine go near heat is when they're in shed.
Okay.
So, you know, I talked to Nick about that before, what his thoughts were. And I guess, you know, he more or less was telling me that I guess they're, you know, they want to get out of that state as fast as possible. And, you know, if they go to the heat, it speeds it up. And then, you know, that way they can just not feel like something's going to swoop down and eat them, you know, because they can't, you know, get out of that stress type of thing. Now, I don't have hide boxes, so maybe that would be the difference. Yeah, I don't know. So, okay. Anything else that you do for your husbandry, for your chondros that...
You know, I guess the key thing is it took me a long time to do this with working with chondros, honestly, but I think the key thing about, my, you know, just approaching the husbandry is just I just don't stress. I just try not to overthink things. You know, I think that's really what it comes down to because, you know, they're a little more specialized than, you know, per se a carpet just because of the humidity requirement. But the reality is that, you know, there's really not much to do with the humidity because these are small enclosures, and if you put a 10-inch style crock water dish in there, you're always going to have a higher humidity level to begin with. And I just use, I keep it simple, newspaper substrate, and that's pretty much it. I'll do a light misting, the animal itself. You know, everybody has their own approach on that, too. Some guys never mist the animal. They only mist the enclosure. Some guys do it at night. I only mist my animals in the morning, just, you know, lightly mist them. And but you know what? I think it's just that if you start getting too many animals, once you hit that 25 chondro mark, I think the reality is no matter what your husbandry is, you're just always going to have that one animal with a slight respiratory. It's just based on sheer numbers. You know, that's just been my experience with it, you know, and then talking to guys with large collections. But overall, I think with chondros, they're no different than if you had a dozen carpet pythons or a dozen chondros. I just think that people tend to stress out a little bit more with the chondros, but it takes work to kill them. It really does. So.
Okay. So you don't really do anything different from your carpets from your chondros.
The only difference is I'll lightly mist them in the morning, and that's it, or just a slight misting on the animal itself. Other than that, because I never mist my carpets, and that's it. That's the only thing I do differently.
Okay.
So, yeah, my babies, I'm pretty, my babies and yearlings, every morning I give them a light misting. My adults, sub-adults, I might mist them every few days. You know, it's not as regimented, but... And it's not even really to get the humidity up. The reason I'm doing it is just for hydration reasons, you know, because they're not the most intelligent animals. They can't find that, you know, water bowl in the bottom of their enclosure. So I just give them the light misting just to get a little moisture off their coils. So that's really the reason I do it.
Now, the one thing that I always wonder about from guys like yourself who've been keeping chondros for a long time, was there ever a point where you didn't mist? And maybe you got bad sheds or something led you back to think, oh, maybe, you know, this is the way I have to go. Even though people, you know, that's kind of a hot topic. Don't do it, do it.
Yeah, everybody,
is there something that led you?
You're absolutely right, Eric. It is a hot topic. But I find it, you know, depending on where you live, you know, a guy who lives in Arizona is going to have a different husbandry requirement than a guy who lives in Jersey. So you almost have to kind of feel your way around what your situation is. I can tell you, living in New Jersey in the winter we just had, it was so brutal with my heat. I have forced hot air in my house, and
right.
even though I have ducts blocked off in my snake room, I had the worst year this year for dry sheds. You know, I really did. Even when I knew an animal was going to shed out that night, I would just soak down the enclosure, and I'm telling you, I still woke up to dry sheds. So it was a real pain in the ass this year. But
wow.
I just been doing what I've been doing. You know, you live in the eastern part of the country, and I just think that light misting, it seems to do the trick. But, you know, we still have a lot to learn as far as, you know, why these animals get RIs. We keeping them, you know, and more importantly, what do we do when they get an RI? Do we increase humidity? Do we dry them out? You know, so that's stuff that we still have a long way to go with.
Right.
But as far as basic husbandry, you know, I do that light, you know, because in my thought process is, hey, you know, in the wild, there's a lot of moisture on the animal and in the environment in the morning, and by 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it's max sun. And even though there's still humidity in the environment, it tends to dry out. So that's what I do. You know, by 1, 2 o'clock, my enclosures are completely dried out. My animals are dried out. There's still humidity. And by nighttime, it's pretty much a completely dry enclosure. So that's kind of what I try to mimic.
Right. And that's one thing that I do hear a lot is about, like, it's about a cycle, you know, whether it's the heat or the humidity or the high, you know, spraying them or, you know, all that kind of stuff is just about giving them a cycle to go through where you miss them, then it dries out, then you miss them again, you know, gets hot, it gets cold.
Well, that's what I always say to guys just getting into chondros. I think, you know, as far as for beginners is, you know, the key thing is just don't keep them too hot and don't keep them too wet. I think that's the key, you know. If you could just eliminate that right off the bat, I think that's going to save you a lot of heartbreak. So.
Right. That's good.
They're not blood pythons. They're not swamp snakes. People always confuse humidity with wetness, you know. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. All right. So yeah, that would be the tip that you would give. Any other tips that you would give somebody just getting into, like, want to take the plunge into chondros? What would be your advice to them?
And don't overheat them. Don't keep them too wet. And I think staying focused. I mean, I see a lot of new guys getting into chondros all the time, and I really encourage them. You try to help them. But, you know, so many times a guy buys a snake from you, he's got, like, 10 deposits on 10 other snakes already, you know, and it's just like, just slow down, you know, try to stay focused. So because you're just getting into them, you're getting into that fast, you're going to have problems. It's just the reality. I don't care how competent you are. You get that many animals that quickly, you know, you're going to have issues. And I always say you can't even appreciate each animal as much if, you know, you have, you know, 3 more coming next week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the one thing I always tell people, and I don't know if it's true with you guys, but the less animals I keep, the more animals I produce. That's just the way it is, you know, because you can stay more focused on what you have, and that seems to me.
Yeah, I agree with that one. The less breeding pairs I've got going, the more I'm focused and can see what's happening, so.
Yep. Yeah, but it's easy. Listen, trust me, I wish I was as disciplined as I try to come across. I'm as, you know, I'm all over the place, like, you know, like I said earlier, just trying to stay focused. And, you know, months ago I said I'm not getting any more animals, I'm just keeping what I have, and I went out and I bought a group of Sanzinia, you know, so I'm like, what the hell am I doing? You know, the worst
experience
of my life. But that's it. But as far as, as somebody new, just getting into it, I think that's, if I could give them any advice, is just don't overheat, don't keep too wet, and, you know, just start slow. Slow, and of course, and I always am a big proponent of buying, you know, captive bred over the farm bred stuff as well. I think that's a huge factor. And we're now at a point, which is such a beautiful thing, because years ago, you know, I understood why people bought from, you know, a captive hatched animal, farm animal, because it was such a significant price difference, and that doesn't exist anymore. You could buy a beautiful, you know, captive bred and born baby chondro for $350. So, you know, save $100 and buy a, you know, a farm hatched baby. It just doesn't make sense anymore, you know. So that's another thing. That's another advice I'd give somebody just getting into it, you know, because you need that support. That's the key thing. I have nothing against farm hatched animals. I have a lot of my own animals that start as farm hatched. I got a lot of stuff from Cameron over at Bushmaster. He's a great guy to deal with. I love his animals. I, you know, I speak very highly of those animals. But, you know, the one thing it's going to be tough for Cam to do is he's not going to be able to give you that support. He's a wholesaler. Admittedly, it's what he does. He's a wholesaler. So when you have an issue with an animal, he's, you know, it's going to be tough for him to be as responsive. You know, so I would say, hey, get as many animals as you want from Cameron down road from, you know, a Bushmaster. But, you probably want to start with somebody who, you know, somebody, a breeder first, at least get that initial support before you start straying off the beaten path a little bit. So.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gary, why don't you walk us through breeding your chondros? What's your approach to getting the eggs?
You know what I do? I don't know what you guys, how you guys, with carpets, because I pretty much approach breeding my chondros the same way as I approach breeding my carpuses. Man, I don't fight the outdoor temps. You know, I really don't. I start, you know, my goal is to start cooling my animals around, you know, early to mid-November, but if temps are really mild and it's just warm out, I'll just wait until December. I let the outdoor temps, you know, tell me, because I could be way off on this, but my perception is that these animals, even though they're inside and in these enclosures with artificial heat and artificial lighting and artificial humidity, you know, everything that we create for them, they still get a sense of, you know, what's going on outside. Especially, you know, we know that any boa breeder will tell you that, you know, when they get a heavy rainstorm outside and the pressure systems come in, that they tend to drop their babies on those particular nights. So these animals are pretty. They're pretty in touch with what's going on around them. So that's the first thing I do is I don't fight the outdoor temps. And then when I start to, I do a 4-week cool down process. You know, the first week, gradually cooling down the temps, lower the daytime temps, and I shut the heat off at night. The next 2 weeks, I just stabilize those temps. And then that fourth week, I just gradually start to increase the heat and start to feed again. And that's it. I mean, I don't really, I try not to overcomplicate it. You know, speaking to guys like, you know, Rico really helped me a lot with, you know, just cycling animals and when to cycle and, you know, what to do, what not to do. But it doesn't take much. I'll tell you, the trick is, you know, I think of a, and you guys know this definitely from the carpets, is that if you have a pair of carpets that are going to breed, it's a beautiful thing. It's so easy to get them to breed. You know, but those carpets that, for whatever, don't want to breed, those males that don't want to breed, it's the same with chondros. When they don't want to breed, it doesn't matter how long you cycle them or what you do or when you lower the temps. And, man, if you can't get them to breed, that's when the fun really starts. So, you know, it's just a pain in the ass. You start to second-guess yourself. So,
yeah.
And then if I'm fortunate enough to get eggs, I just had a crappy clutch. Man, I just had 27 eggs from a beautiful Diamond Jungle Jaguar girl bred to a pure diamond. So I have, out of 27 eggs, I have 8 fertile eggs in the incubator. They look good. So that's the good news. They do look good. They're, I think, I want to say 20. It's today, the 29th, so they're 26 days today.
Okay.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll keep my fingers crossed there. But, you know, the one thing about breeding chondros I learned from Tom Keoghan out in Florida, who breeds a lot of different pythons, is that I don't do a nest box. You know, I think most chondro guys all do nest boxes. I don't do nest boxes, and just because it just creates another hurdle. So many times you're reading that these females don't want to go into the nest boxes. Some guys actually lock the females in the nest boxes. first thing I do is when I know a female's gravid, I put her in a 24-inch, you know, cube. And then I just put a bunch of layers of newspaper on the bottom of the enclosure, and I literally tape it, scotch tape it, to the bottom of the enclosure so she can't go underneath it. And then I cover it with cypress mulch.
Okay.
And so, therefore, the entire enclosure now is a nest box. You know, it's a nice size cage, and I just remove my higher perches, so she only has one lower perch. So if she drops her eggs, she's going to drop them nice and soft on cypress mulch. And then I just put a half log in there. So if she wants to go underneath the half log, which 99.9% of the time they will do to lay their eggs. So that's kind of what I did, is I just make the entire, I just move them to smaller enclosures, and I just make the entire thing a nest box. And I just had a lot of success doing that. Just a lot more luck.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Sounds like it would work that way. So now the one thing that I, what is your approach to the incubation? Do you do maternal, or do you stick them in that incubator? I know you said you had a really nice incubator.
You know, Owen, there's nothing I would love more than to wake up. I always love those pictures people post with that, you know, the Condro out of the, you know, laying on the eggs with heads poking through, and the carpet pythons with the heads poking through. To be blunt, I don't have the balls to do maternal, man. I just don't have the guts, but I really don't. Even on the best clutches, as we all know, those eggs look perfect, and for no rhyme or reason, one of them goes bad, and I just can't imagine losing a clutch, you know, from one egg, you know, just running through the whole clutch. So I'm pulling the eggs. That's what I'm doing. I'm just pulling the eggs, and I go, you know, what we call just stereotypical chondro textbook hatching, no substrate. You know, that's the key, no substrate. Before speaking with, I don't know if you guys know Jason Stevens. Jason's a big chondro guy, and he really, I owe him a lot. He really gave me a lot of, a couple years ago, just helping me modify my incubator. I always say before I spoke with Jason, I was like, I was literally like the Jeffrey Dahmer of python eggs, man. There wasn't a python egg I couldn't kill, believe me. And, yeah, so basically I go no substrate, and yeah, the Nature Spirit incubators, you know, they're fine incubators. I think most incubators out there, unless you maybe go with like a Habitat Systems, I think they all need a little bit of modification. But I just, they're all insulated, like half-inch styrofoam, and then I do the old, I secure the probe right in front of the fan itself, so it's that nice, you know, constant temperature throughout the entire incubator. And yeah, I use those, I can't remember what they're called right now, those, you get them in like the kitchen wholesaler places, those, you know, the clear plexiglass, polycarbonate, I guess, the boxes, so they're nice and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important, is to be able to see the eggs without having to open the egg box. I think that's a big help. And you know, I just remove the lid once a week, maybe, just to wipe the condensation off. And just by making that change, no substrate. You know, I used to use vermiculite, and listen, a lot of guys have tremendous success with it. I just never had that touch where I could read the vermiculite, you know, the moisture. So this seems to do the trick for me. I hatched out like 56 baby chondros last year, so this is my method. This is what I do now, and it seems to work for me. So
clearly, it's working if you're hatching out 56 baby chondros. Yeah, that's a plus.
I'm not good at many things in life, but I can hatch a chondro egg. I can get a baby chondro feeding. Other than that, man, that's it. That's it for me and my strengths. So
speaking of baby chondros, when I went over to Buddy to get my boy, you showed me his hatchlings, and I was completely taken aback because I'd never seen hatchling chondros. I always seen them a little bit older.
Yeah.
And I was expecting, all right, runt, baby, carpet, that's about as big as I was expecting. They are tiny.
Yeah,
they are small. They look fragile. Like, I didn't want to breathe on it for fear of killing it. I mean, you know, it was. So what are some of the tricks that you have for getting them to feed?
All right, this is important, so you want to write this down. The first thing you do if you start trying to feed your baby chondros for the first time is you drink, okay? And then you drink some more.
Drink heavily, okay. I'm listening.
Which I was kidding. And, you know, and then you just got to just do it head on. It really. Some guys really get a sense of accomplishment from it. I truly dread it, because trying to get one baby chondro going is like, I could take care of 100 animals in a collection in the same time sometimes to get one baby feeding. So that's the bad news. I mean, it does suck. You can hatch a baby less than 10 grams, if you can imagine that. It's just, it's a nightmare. But the good news is that in my experience, 90% of these babies will feed for you on first attempt. You know, they'll take frozen thought pinks right off the tongs. That's been my experience. But those other 10% are going to send you in an early grave. I mean, they will test your patience. And there's really no major – there's tricks, Owen. You know, there's definitely tricks to it. I mean, I chick scent. I'm all about chick scenting, you know, taking a – you know, I tried frozen thought. I put a little tiny chick scent on the tip of the pinky. And so, you know, if I have no luck with that, then I'll go to I'll force feed pinky heads. And I'll get that going for a while. But the thing I don't do, and nobody should do, is don't panic. These little guys can go for quite some time without a meal in them. So you don't, you know, I'm not doing this 2 weeks in or 3 weeks in. I'm doing this probably 5 or 6 weeks in. They still have a lot of strength before I start to even think about force feeding. But the ones that, you know, strike and grab and, you know, and wrap and then drop the pinky head, that's bad enough. But man, those runners. Talk to any chondro breeder about these little, you know, these little babies that you barely touch them, and boom, man, they are off the perch and on the floor so fast. They just want to get away from you, and you just – what you really want to do is you want to put them in the freezer is what you want to do, but, you know, makes you a bad person, so you got to get them going. But, yeah, that's the only downside. And, again, that's – I do want to stress that, you know, it's definitely – you know, it happens every clutch you're going to have a couple of non-feeders, but it will be – I shouldn't say that. There are guys with tremendous luck. There are guys who hatch out 12 babies, you know, 20 baby clutches. They're all feeding, but that's usually – that's an anomaly, and in most cases you're going to have at least a baby or two not feeding in every clutch. And
yeah.
Just got to stay – you know, one thing – I don't know if you guys have ever tried this, but what I'll do is I'll take a pinky – the shit we do with these snakes, too, is so gross, you know, but I'll take a pinky head. You know, it's a frozen – pinky head, and I'll defrost it, and you know, right where I cut the pinky head itself, where the opening is on the bottom of the neck. I've actually had luck doing this, and I'll take a flagyl tablet, like a tiny little bit of a flagyl, and man, I make it like a really fine pattern, and I'll dip the pinky head, just tiny, slightly coat, you know, it'll stick right there because it's that moisture in the neck where you cut the pinky's head off, and I've had animals actually eat that flagyl. I mean, you know, it's in some cases can act as an appetite stimulant, and because it kills, I guess, parasites right within the animal that I guess were preventing the animal from eating well. But this is not a proven thing or anything. But I will tell you, in my experience, on more than one occasion, I've had luck doing that. So you know, everybody's got their little secrets and trade secrets they have, but it's really just patience, and there's a lot of technique involved too. That's the other thing, but. Yeah, so that's why last year after hatching out all those babies, this year I said, man, if I get two clutches this year, I'll be happy because I just don't want to – I just don't want to deal with that many babies again this year, baby chondros at least.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yikes. That's a lot of
shit out of you guys.
Yeah. I got 4 years before I even get baby chondros, so, you know, this will be something to look forward to, maybe.
You know, if you're reading Greg Maxwell's books, you know, the one of the Complete Chondros, he specifically says, you know, before you go feed your baby chondros for first-time feedings, so I think he says, like, have a glass of wine, you know, just put yourself, you got to get in the mode, you know, you really do, because if you go in tense or anything, these animals pick up on that. And listen, you guys, I'm sure with carpets, you guys deal with the same thing. Even though they're bigger, it doesn't matter whether an animal's 10 grams or 30 grams. If it's not eating, it's still a pain in the ass.
Yeah, there have been those times where I'm like, I'm going to walk out of the room now before I end your little life. So, you know, it's
so true. It's so true.
I'll be back tomorrow. And, you know, it's one of those things where it happens. But, you know, we'll see about the
you'll be fine. We'll help you through it when the time comes, Owen, I promise.
How did Owen become an alcoholic? Well,
yeah,
I started reading chondros, and it went downhill from there. So.
Yeah, you'll be getting them all going, but you'll be in rehab. You'll have a nice clutch of babies going.
Exactly. You'll be great. It'll be nice. I'll be trying to get back. But, you know, hey, great chondros, so it makes up for it.
You know, one of the questions that I had, you said you were waiting until about a year, then you sex them, and then you put them up for sale. And one of the things that always sticks out in my mind is when we talked to Rico Alder on the show, he talked about how chondros are like wet tissue paper. So do you have any tips on sexing a baby, well, what would be yearling chondro?
Yearlings, yeah. You know, as far as to give an idea of size, I don't know, I couldn't tell you how many grams, probably in the area of, I don't know, say 60, 70 grams, I think something in that area. But I really go by food size. When my animals are on pretty like three-quarter grown mice, they've gone through their onogenic color changes, that's when I feel secure about probing them. But you know what? It's funny about probing any Morelia, you know, carpets that you guys were talking about it earlier, is I actually put in my in the fine print on my website is just like, you know, I feel like I'm pretty confident as far as, you know, sexing animals. But Morelia suck. I mean, they just do. I mean, and I do make mistakes, you know, it's as simple as that. I just sold an animal to a guy, you know, a higher-end animal, and, you know, as a female, and, you know, great guy, and he called me up like 2 weeks later, and he goes, Garrett, just shed. I'm like, oh, that's great. He goes, yeah, it looks great, but it shed sperm plugs. I'm like, oh, damn it, you know, so.
That's not great, yeah.
You do make mistakes, man. It's just. Yeah, because you got to be so. The trick is you got to be gentle. But you got to be. You got to push enough on that probe at the same time. So you know you're trying to be accurate. But you know, I'll continue to make mistakes. I'm sure. Hopefully, I just got to keep them. Just keep them to a minimal.
Do you find that? do you find that most Morelia people are accepting of that fact? Like,
well,
you
know it's
I mean?
A weird because when people buy, especially. Like a guy like myself, if I, you know, I hate to say it that way, but, you know, I'm pretty reputable. So, you know, they're thinking, hey, I'm buying from Gary. He's been around for a long time. He's got a good reputation. So if he sells me a female, I know it's going to be a female. So I don't blame them if they'd be really upset, you know, if they had the animal for a year, 2 years, and they're just assuming the whole time. It is what it is. I've actually given a lot of thought to this subject with my website because I'm trying to figure out, you know, I always want to be fair to everybody and but fair to myself at the same time. So I just said, hey, listen, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to probe the animal. I'll probe it several times and, you know, just – but I invite you to, you know, how I approach it now is I tell any of my customers is, you know, have somebody confident who you know probe the animal, you know, too, within the next 30 days. You know, so I try to give them enough time and, you know, if I'm mistaken, you know, if I'm wrong, hey, man, I'll not only, you know, obviously do the right thing. I'll pay to have it shipped back and I'll pay to obviously give you 100% of your money back. But other than that, I mean – It's a fine line because, you know, I'd also don't want to sell a snake to somebody and then 3 years from now get a call saying, hey, man, you sold me a snake 3 years ago. I want my money back because, you know,
right.
I don't want to do
right.
that either. Finding that medium, you always want to keep your clients happy. That's important, but, you know, you want to be fair to yourself. But, yeah, Eric, to answer your question, mistakes are going to continue to happen. I don't care who it is, you know, and how reputable you are and how good you are at what you do. It's just it happens. Morelia are tricky. As babies, you know, and young animals, they are tricky.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. So, all right, so cool. So we're going to talk about some of the stuff that you have in your collection as far as chondro goes. And I got a couple questions from our buddy Rob Stone. And one of the things that he wanted to know about is he wanted you to talk about your, I hope I say this name right, Arfax. Is that right?
Yeah, the Arfax animals.
Right? Yeah.
You know, that name Arfax was called, so it's a region, right? It's north of, I guess, north of west, in West Papua New Guinea, Arfax, if I got that right, up in, so there's the Arfax Mountains, and just south of that is Manokwari, the city, I guess, in Manokwari. I'm not sure how far they are apart. I think on my map it's about a half inch, so very close. But anyway, so some people tend to say, hey, is that the same animal, it's the same locale, since they're so, you know, relatively close to each other within a few hundred miles. But the Arfax animals came in from Bushmaster, reptiles from Cameron. I probably want to tell you, I'd probably say 7-8 years ago now. And he labeled them as Arfax, you know, and there's always the argument with locality types. Unless you're there to see exactly where these animals are from, you have to take people's word on it. So Cameron's a solid resource. You know, I would trust him with anything, and he's being told this is what they are from the people he's getting in with. So I call them Arfax because that's what I bought him as, Arfax chondros. You know, I used to refer to him as a Highland animal, but then speaking with Daniel Natouche at the ICAST show, he mentioned, well, there's really no such thing as really these Highland animals, you know. So I was like, all right, well, so much for that then. But the Arfax are just a different locale. I mean, there's, you know, if they truly are from Arfax, there's not many around. Jason Stevens, who I mentioned earlier, has one. I sold off a bunch of babies this year. But as far as I know, I think I have the only actual breeding pair of Arfax. So I love those animals. People tend to like them. They seem to sell very quickly. I'm working with four of those now. Unfortunately, it's a small group. I just have my original adults, which came from Cameron, and I'm raising another pair of 2012s, which I held back. And I'm working with the Manaquari animals as well, and I specifically hold back the Manaquaris that were red babies, only because with chondros, there's some amazing animals that were derived as yellow neonates, beautiful stuff out there, but it seems that the majority of the time, especially the majority of high blue animals, I got to watch my wording here because I'm going to piss off a lot of chondro people if I don't say this correctly. But the reality is, you know, most of the high blue stuff out there started out as a red neonate, so I tend to hold back, you know, the red stuff. And that's the cool thing about RFACs too. You know, if you breed an R, from, again, I only have two animals I'm working with, so I hate to make these blanket statements, but for purposes of this conversation, I have two RFAC animals, and they were both red as babies. I had them both as babies, and I have had three clutches now, and I've never produced a yellow baby from breeding my two RFACs together. And that's kind of weird, because in most cases, when you breed two animals together that were both red, you're going to at least get a scattering of yellow neonates. But RFACs seem to always breed, you know, from my one pair always seems to, you know, produce red neonates. So,
is there a big difference between the Manaquari red neos and the RFACs?
There, in my collection, yeah, absolutely. If I showed you guys the RFAC babies and I showed you the Manaquaris, yeah, it's a significant difference. The Manaquaris have a lot more black scalation to them. It's a much thicker black, you know, just thicker black striping and lined and stuff. But they definitely look different, and that's what really attracted me to these animals too. It just, I don't know. They just when you see an adult Manaquari, just like some of these males from some of these bloodlines, you just know it's, you know, like you see an Aru, you know, you see a high white chondro, you know it's an Aru. You know, you can tell even you guys are carpet guys. You see a chondro, if it's a Biak, you guys easily recognize it's a Biak chondro, right? And I get that. I get that same vibe with that Manaquari. I could look at an animal and I say, wow, it's, you know, that would really, I'd be really surprised if that was not a Manaquari type. But, so that's what that's all I work with now. And it's, I love them. And not only do I love them, the general chondro community seems to really love these animals as well. And I wish I had more. That's what I'm working on. Just, there's none out there. I mean, I can't find them. I've tried to get more RFACs for years now. I've tried to, even looking for red Manaquaris are like impossible to come by. So anything I have, unfortunately, is just stuff that, it's everything I produce in the near future is unfortunately going to be related. So I'm not happy about that.
Huh. That's awesome. And do they have different looks based on as adults based on their neo color, like I often, like with carpets, I can kind of pick that out. I kind of have an eye for it now, but like I often wonder with chondros, I'm trying to get my feet and my bearings for like what you look for in a neonate.
Well,
they just look like red and yellow to me.
I completely understand that. You know, with the stuff that I'm working, I always tell people you want to go with as much black on the animal as possible because in most cases that black tends to translate into blue scalation as the animal gets older in most cases. But, you know, it's just like with carpets, really, when you have a clutch of babies in front of you in carpets, is really what you're doing is you're looking for that standout animal, the animal that doesn't look like the other babies in the clutch. And we do the same thing with carpets, you know, with chondros, you know, just looking for that animal that doesn't look like the other animals in the clutch and hold them back. And in most cases that usually translates into extremely bold pattern or almost patternless, you know, that's usually what we're looking for. So, but hey, we still have a lot to learn. We're holding back, continuing to hold back a lot of animals. And, you know, I'm raising, I want to tell you about 9 or 10 red Manaquaris right now from two separate clutches. And,
okay.
I'm really anxious what these things are going to be looking like in about 6 months. So.
Okay. So,
yep.
Like with the Manaquaris, you know, you were saying about how they have a specific look to them. You know, with the Biaks, they have the big dragon-like head. You know, the Arus, you know, completely different type of head. What is the look about these Manaquaris that when you look at them, you can tell them right away?
It's just that there's a difference between. There's three types of really blue animals in chondros. There's, you know, females that go maternally blue. And then there's chondros we would call them like, you know, high blue animals, meaning like, you know, high blue, a lot of blue markings. You see some really nice Jayapura types with these nice striped blue dorsal patterns down, you know, down their back and these blue markings
right.
all over electric blue.
Mm.
And then there's what we call, you know, true blue chondros, which it's not just the dorsal area that's blue. It's the animal's, you know, the body itself, you know, along the side of the body, it's like just completely blue. With the manaquaris, they would fall into that second category. They would be considered like the high blue animal. They would have a lot of those high electric blue markings to them. And so when you see, a lot of times when I see those animals in a certain like diamond pattern almost, I usually, you know, the majority of the time they're going to wind up being manaquari type animals. Sometimes they'll be laminas. What we used to call all these animals Highland types until, you know, Daniel pretty much set us all straight. You know, he's definitely the guy we look to for locality information. So he kind of blew some theories out of the water a little bit over the past year or so just by, you know, his knowledge. But, yeah, again, they fall into that high blue category with the high blue markings as opposed to some of these, you know, true blue animals, which, you know, simply command a higher price tag as well. So.
And, yeah, I see. I understand that. I get that. For those of us that weren't able to attend ICAST, what was it that Daniel said about the Highland animals?
Daniel just didn't seem to think that he just thought it was a lot of information on that weekend given, but in his overall in questioning the Highland varieties, he basically just said there are no Highland animals. There really aren't. They're all from, you know, these certain regions, but he just really didn't consider them Highland animals, and he understood that, you know, because we would always say, hey, these Cyclops mountain animals and these Wamina types and manaquaris, we kind of referred all to those three locale types as like some of the Highland stuff. And Daniel
gotcha.
Basically said that's just, it's just not accurate information. It sounds great, you know, for marketing and kind of, you know, just so we know how to, we can put them in a certain group, but it's just simply not accurate.
Right.
But yeah, okay. I wish you guys had been there. That was, honestly, that was the best show, best gathering I had ever been to in all these years. It was pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, his talk was awesome.
Yeah,
he totally. He was a really good speaker in the way that he could. I don't know. He just grabbed my attention, and what he was saying just was so like earth shattering. You know.
Yeah. Well, I wish I was as poised and articulate as him at his age. You know, the guy's like he's like an old. Amazing, you know. And he truly lives amongst the chondros, you know, he really does. He truly lives within the animal, with the animals. So what better resource to have out there and, you know, bringing back information. So,
yeah, I thought that was one of the coolest parts of his whole talk was when he was showing us what it's like to do one of these trips and some of the obstacles that he has to go through.
Going out to the Kafu Islands that took like 3 days to get out there or something or ridiculous. Yeah. See, that's where I'm at, man. Honestly, at this point in my life, I'm all about convenience, man. I don't want to be around all those bugs, so I'd rather just watch it. I want to be like Owen. I want to go like herping in like Alaska, like Owen. You know what I mean? Like I don't want bugs around.
I turned over a few rocks. Can't find anything. Oh well, back to the hotel.
Yeah. You go look for harp seals.
Yeah. I'm gonna look for a polar bear and call that herping.
Yeah.
So. Rob had another question about, and this kind of intrigues me, and are you still working with animals descended from the black-headed Kofia male or any other Kofia animals?
You know, I'm not, Eric. I love that animal. I mean, it was a great showpiece animal. He, unfortunately, you know, he died. Rico had him for a while. He came down with an RI, and he died. We were able to produce quite a few animals with him. No, I never held on to any of that lineage. And I love the animals that he produced, but, you know, it's just honestly, it's just not in my sweet spot. I acquired the animal just because he was such a unique animal, but I'm just so much more into this manaquari and artifact stuff. And just because of limited space, I just didn't wind up holding back any of those animals. I actually just shipped the last trio of those animals about 6 months ago to a gentleman out in Canada. And he bought a 1.2 group from me, so hopefully he's going to have some success with them. I'll stay in touch with him and see if those things breed out true or not. So,
cool.
Yeah.
All right. What do you have going on this season as far as your parents and stuff?
You know, carpet stuff, I have a Precision Diamond Jungle Jaguar. I produced to the Gary Val Diamond, so I have 8 eggs cooking right now. And then I have a... the one animal I have in chondro-wise that's not an Arfak or a manaquari type is I have a Biak cross Aru locale type male. And if you guys go to my website, I mean, she's a beast. I mean, she's, I don't know, probably up in the 1,800-1,900 gram area. But she's honestly, she would give your white lips a run for their money, Owen. Honestly, man, she just hates people and hates me especially. And So I bred her to one of my Manaquaris. It's my F1 Prada Manaquari, which is a really high blue animal. And if you want to see blue, I'll have to send you a picture of her. I mean, she is as blue gets. I mean, she's maternal. She's hormonally blue right now. And today is day 13 since her prelay shed. I didn't see her ovulate. I didn't. I saw her copulate many times. I didn't see her ovulate. But she refused food last night, so I'm hoping, praying to the chondro gods, as we say, that I'm going to get eggs from her in the next 7 to 14 days. So
Is she the one you posted up on MVF?
Yeah, that blue girl.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, a really pretty male. She's normally like not that blue. I mean, she's got beautiful blue tones to her. She's a beautiful blue and green animal. I mean, very pronounced blue. But maternally, now that she's hopefully, you know, gravid, I mean, she's as blue as they get. So
yeah, wow.
Yeah, I have to, cool. You know what I should do is tell her to like some unsuspecting carpet guy now. You know, I just tell her she's a, you know, she's that way. I just blew it with this phone call. I should have said anything, you know. So, and trust me, as excited as I am getting eggs from her, I'm dreading getting those eggs away from her because she's, I'm telling you, she's probably the meanest snake I've ever owned. So,
wow.
Yeah, she's a bitch. So.
Do you find it difficult to get eggs away from chondros typically, or no?
No, I don't. You know, I think like with most pythons, you know, within, you know, if you do it in a reasonable amount of time when they're done laying, they're so exhausted that, you know, I just make it so fast. And but no, I don't think it's too bad at all. I don't. I think it's easier than a carpet because they're so much smaller. You know, like some of these bigger carpets, you know, they start writhing around, suddenly the eggs are going all over the place. You know, with the chondros, at least they're more manageable. So,
right.
And they could always have a tranquilizer gun, too, if worse comes to worse. I'm not better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, cool. Anything else you have going on project-wise?
That's it, man.
Season?
That's it. Those 56 babies really just burnt me out last year. They really did. So, you know, I only had two planned pairings this year, and if both of them go, man, I'm a happy guy. I'm really stoked to get animals from these two breedings. So hopefully, like I said, I'm going to get some eggs from her, and that'll make my season. Hopefully I'll get some fertile eggs from her, and that'll make my season. So,
awesome.
And then, okay. And I'm going to send my non-feeding chondros. You could practice on mine. I'll send you a bottle of Jack Daniels and, like, three
babies.
Nice.
All right.
Technically,
there
it should be one bottle per baby. I think that's the rationale. The rationale.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So.
One bottle. All right, Owen, you're up.
Yay, I get to do something. Anyway, as your message just comes through over the backline wire, thank you for taking a delay. Gary, what do you think is the current state of the chondro market? Do you see it being an upswing in popularity? Do you see that the prices are justified for some of these animals? I mean, some of these looking at some of these animals, it's $3,000, $6,000 for a yearling.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you, I think when you look at the chondro market, I really compare it to the entire reptile market in the sense that, man, if it's, you know, nice animals priced reasonably sell really fast. You know? I think it's whether it's a carpet or a chondro, I think just nice animals, you know, priced reasonably, just they sell. And if it's somebody who's, you know, known on the boards and somebody who contributes on a regular basis and has a, you know, a good reputation, I think those animals will sell even quicker. But, I mean, look, I always tell people, listen, if my house is worth, 20% less than it was, you know, 5 years ago, my chondros are also going to be worth less money. I mean, it's just the economy that we're in right now. I mean, it's just, you know, chondros are disposable income. Like, you know, it's a luxury item. And, you know, so that's definitely taken a hit, like, you know, all the markets have. But, you know, my experience, you know, I'm really fortunate because, you know, like the carpet community, you guys all know each other. You guys, there's a lot of, you know, it's a tight-knit group. I know a lot of the carpet guys, and you get together socially. Same with the chondro market. You know, we all know each other, and, you know, there are guys out there who, you know, like me, I know what other people have. I know that Rich Culver out in Alaska has some outrageous, you know, high blue stuff that I want to get my hands on at some point. People know that I have Manaquaris and Arfax, a lot of, and they want those, so they know who to call. So it's nice. It's, we have a, you know, a nice little built-in market. But, you know, for the guys who are just, you know, the guys who aren't as well-known, just produce the clutch of eggs or a clutch of babies from nice parents, they'll have a tougher time just because, you know, people show them, and people are worried, hey, I'm going to send the money, I'm not going to get the animals. But, you know, you build time, you post, you get a reputation, it'll help down the road. But so I think to answer your question, I think, yeah, I think the chondro market is it's pretty stabilized at this point. And I think, you know, it's yellow babies from, you know, green bloodlines are going to sell in that 3 to 350 range, and they're not going to be blowing out the door. Believe me, it's going to take you time to sell them. And but like I said, nice animals price quickly. We'll price well. We'll sell quickly. It's as simple as that, you know.
Right. And you think that the lineage and parents have anything to do with also setting the price?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's a big help. You know, if you're selling babies from some proven lines, and you could show past, you know, animals from that bloodline that they held a certain specific trait, that's a huge help. You know, you guys, like I do, you go to King Snake, go to any of these sites, and you see, you know, the headline always says, you know, high blue chondro for sale from high blue line, and you open up the ad, and it's like a, you know, it's a solid green animal, it's, you know, and it's selling for like, you know, $2,500 because that's what they paid as a baby because they bought it from a blue line, but unfortunately the animal never turned blue. So that animal, I don't care what the market is, you're going to have a tough time selling those animals. But, you know, certain guys out there, you know, Marshall Mendez and Rich Culver and, you know, these guys who are just consistently producing some outrageous blue animals, they command a good number for those animals and they sell the hell out of them. They do, and they actually sell, you know. So...
Cool.
Yep.
We have another question from our good friend Rob Stone. And then it's, the question is, since he used to or still does broker a fair amount of animals, how does he feel about the genuine Indo-bred animals, i.e. pricing and potential cool phenotypes, health, or availability? Essentially, he touches on the diverse chondro issue. There are reasons to favor U.S. captive bred animals, support the breeders, but for genuine Indo-bred neos, the negative talk amongst chondro folks about them doesn't hold that much water. So the question here is...
question? I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I got it.
You want me to repeat it? Yeah.
Fine. Eric, did Owen just say something? Did he just ask me some question or something?
Yeah, I did, a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
Rob's like shaking his head. He's like, Jesus Christ. So.
He came prepared, right?
I know, Jesus.
No, you know, I touched on this earlier. So how do I feel about farm-bred animals and the Indo stuff? Man, I love it. I really do. I would never hesitate personally to call up Cameron and buy any baby chondro we had, you know. I think the trouble people get into is when they buy it as their very first animal. I think that's what the difference is. Cameron's a great guy, and but he's just not going to be able to give you the support that you need as a first-time, you know, chondro buyer. And the reality is, and I'll also say in that same breath that all things being equal, I will go with a captive-bred chondro over a captive-hatched chondro, you know, Indo baby any day of the week. And especially because the price differential now is, it could be as little as, you know, $7,500. To me, it makes no sense for somebody just getting into chondros to go out and buy a farm bred baby when they could buy a, you know, captive bred baby from a breeder who's going to give them support. So with that said, I'll also say that if you're going to buy a captive hatched Indo baby, you know, the other problem is that people go to snake shows and they buy them from brokers and middlemen, you know, and they're not chondro guys, and they're keeping them the same way they keep their, you know, baby balls and retex and whatever, you know, imported stuff they have. And that's the other deadly thing. Cameron gets these great animals in that are solid, and he sells them to some middleman, and then these guys carting around shows. And, you know, man, as a first-time chondro buyer, that's the last place you want to go is, you know, if you can buy a baby chondro for $250 at, like, Hamburg or something, man, Jesus, you just don't want to do that. You're going to have a bad experience, you know. You might get lucky, but I'm telling you, 90% of the time you'll have a bad experience. And I think Rob asked, I used to broker a fair amount of animals. Do I still, you know, broker or, you know, genuine? So what I'll tell you about broker, I love brokering animals, you know, because I think, you know, it's such a dirty word, you know, broker or jobber when you put it, and I like to think it's like I've really given brokering, you know, a great name in the sense that, you know, I would never sell an animal. It's going to sound like a Gary Scimino reptile commercial now, so you guys can bear with me for a second. But the reality is I would never sell an animal I wouldn't keep for myself, you know, and I wouldn't buy an animal to sell that I wouldn't consider keeping for myself. And I don't really broker like I used to, but, you know, still, take, for example, you know, baby Bowen's pythons, you know. I'll get in some baby Bowen eye, I'll get in a clutch, I'll get them feeding, I'll get them established, I'll place pictures up, you know, so people see the specific animals, I'll give the information. So, yeah, I'll always do higher-end stuff like that. But, you know, the days of buying, you know, whole clutches of, you know, Burmese python babies and stuff like that, it's just, it doesn't make any financial sense anymore. But, yes, so absolutely I will continue to broker some of the hard-to-get stuff. But it's been pretty minimal at this point. You know, it's pretty much just stuff now that I produce.
Cool.
So I hope I answered that correctly.
No, you did. And I mean, like, the I do see a bunch of the because every once in a while I'll talk with Ian from Outback Reptiles, and he has chondros every once in a while that he gets direct from Cam. And it's one of those things of, like, if I could just go straight to Cam, it probably would be better. So, you know, it's one of those things.
I see Ian at all the Hamburg shows. If I was looking for a ball python or anything else, I wouldn't hesitate. Sandbow, I'd buy from Ian. I would never buy a condo from him. I just wouldn't, you know, no offense to him.
No.
And that's, again, in that same breath, I have to say, you got a guy like Ryan from Clockwork Reptiles out there. Ryan actually lives in Colorado. He goes over to Cameron's. He handpicks stuff. I would never hesitate. You know, so that's an example of a middleman that I would buy from every time, and he has all Cameron stuff. But the difference is he actually goes over, he'll handpick this stuff, and he'll take pictures of it. And there's nothing better to me than, you know, seeing the picture of the animal I'm actually going to buy, you know, especially in this day and age when it's, you know, the Internet. There's no reason we shouldn't see pictures anymore, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Just on a side note, you brought up baby Bowen's pythons. You know, what's your experience with them, and do you have you know, I don't know, just overall, what's your experience with
them? Yeah, I've had, my experience with baby Bowen, I've been really positive. You know, I've had really good luck with them. You know, I think Bowen and I have a bad reputation just because they always brought in, you know, imported larger animals, you know, 10, 20 years ago, just like we did with all these things. But I find that, you know, some take a little, they're no different than any other python. Some of them eat right away, some of them don't. The ones that don't are a pain in the ass, and you have to mess around with chick down and egg yolk and all that stuff. But, man, I've probably had no less than 18 over the past, I'll tell you, 3 years. I've never lost one. And I did sell. I know, like, 8 months later came down with some kind of skin condition, eventually did die on the owner. But that was a one-off out of all the ones, as far as I know, I sold. And, you know, that could have been a reticulated python that got that, for all I know. You know, like a captive bred or something animal. But overall, my experience has been good, because honestly, if it wasn't good, Eric, I would never buy any more and sell them. You know, I just wouldn't do it because, you know, financially, it's a big investment to make and bring these babies in. The last thing I want to do is take a chance on a bunch of animals that are going to come in and die on me. So,
sure. Now, do you keep in contact with any of the people that purchased them from you, and then you're able to see, like, have they had any success with
Not success in breeding them and success in keeping them. I haven't really spoken with, you know, the people who have bought them from me, but I have seen pictures posted, you know, from people from time to time. I know Mark Spataro actually got a few babies from me, too, and he had, you know, just kept in contact with him.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think anybody's really. There's a couple of guys. I know Spataro produced a few babies last year, but I don't think anybody's really breeding them yet. But, hey, listen, we're making major strides. We can now keep these things in captivity without them rolling over and dying on us. So, you know, we're getting there. So I think we just need more animals to work with. I think that's going to be a big help. So.
Yeah, my thought has always been that you have to get them, they just mature longer. They take longer to settle into captivity, and, you know, people pass them off too quick, you know,
yeah,
give up on the project.
We're a bunch of impatient Americans, right? We want our animals sexually, we want our males our females
breeding
5 years, and if it doesn't fit into that criteria, it's like it's got to go. So,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guilty of that as well, too, by the way.
Yeah, I think we all are to a certain extent, you know. I think we've all been there to where, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm in this for the long haul, and, you know, and then you're like, oh,
I could really use that case.
Yeah. What's your, do you have any recommendations, tips, suggestions on starting up a locality chondro project? Anything you would recommend, do, not do?
You know what, man, I would just tell anybody, buy what you like. that's really what you got to do. You got to buy what you like, you know. Just simple as that. I mean, just like with any animal, it's. I probably wouldn't, you know, Biaks or, you know, it's, you know, if somebody asks you what's a great beginner to start with, you know, they all have their pros and cons. You know, Aru babies tend to be readily available. Arus, you know, they have a reputation, especially as babies, as being a little more difficult to get started. But a readily available, great pricing. Biaks are always available. Again, great pricing, but then, you know, they tend to be a little more on the aggressive side. So it's all their plus and minuses. But, man, I would tell anybody just, you know, get what you like. I think my one consistent message would be just always to just, you know, go slow. Like, you know, like your barbecue and slow and steady. Just, you know, don't guys get into chondros and they have literally a dozen animals within like 3 months. And I'm thinking, man, when I got into it, it took me like, you know, because they were so expensive, it took me like, you know, I don't know, 3 years to get like three animals, you know. So just take it slow, get what you like, and I think that'll be the key to success.
Yeah, I think this, I don't know if, I guess this was on Buddy and Bill's show when they were talking about getting chondros, and it doesn't always have to be about breeding them, you know, just keeping them.
Yeah.
I think Morelia people in general, well, I would say breeders in general, sort of sometimes miss the boat on trying to captivate the audience of the person that's going to keep a pet snake.
Yeah.
You know, like,
mm-hmm.
Because I can't think of a better display animal. You know, it's kind of like a reptile fish tank. You know what
right.
I mean? And you're missing those, that people, those.
No, you're absolutely right. I think, and to speak to your point, I think the issue, the reason that, you know, guys like us who breed, I think what happens is because once you breed, you're a breeder, and you just love it. You're bitten by that breeder bug, so you can't understand why other people wouldn't want to do it. But there are a lot of truly hobbyists out there who just want one or two animals, you know. And it's, you know, I think of everything like you guys do. I think, you know, in pairs and, you know, in trios and stuff.
Yeah,
you're right. There are guys, especially in the basin market, I've sold some nice basins to guys who just really wanted that. They spent more money on the enclosure than the basin. They just wanted that big basin in the middle of their living room, you know, with that big white stripe. So, yeah, but you're right. I have a tough time with that because my thought process doesn't work that way. But you're right. We don't think guys like that. You're really looking for one animal.
Yeah. Switch gears a little bit. I know we're going back and forth from chondros to carpets to chondros to carpets, but it's a good thing. What's your thoughts on the whole carpet morph market? And, you know, are you a pro carpet morph guy? Or
I love morphs. I love all this stuff, and I think it's so cool. I think back, you know, 25, 30 years ago, the stuff I see today, I never thought I would see. You know, it's just amazing. You know, Bill Stegall sent me a picture of this one of his Diamond Jungle zebras, man, a thing just blows me away. I mean, the answer for me is I love them all. I'm a sucker for a bright yellow and black animal that always, you know, gets my attention. In fact, I think it was on your site, Eric. You had you have that really nice jungle carpet on your site, a picture of it. I tried clicking on the pic, but is that your site? I saw that really nice jungle.
Is it the striped one? The striped one?
That one I love. Yeah, I think that was the animal. Yeah.
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 I see black
and
yellow.
Yeah, we all want the striped one.
What's that, Owen?
Everybody wants the stripes jungle.
Eric
would just produce them.
Yep. I'm a sucker for stripes, granite phase animals.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love carpet morphs. You know, I actually, Precision Reptiles over in Germany, Ali, back in 2009, 2010, he asked me to be his U.S. Distributor, so he sent me all his animals and I sold them here domestically in the States. I had never seen a Diamond Jungle Jaguar carpet before that. Never heard of it, didn't know what it was. And, man, I was opening the bags, and I saw these things. And that female that I have now, I have eggs from her. She's just one of the most beautiful animals I've seen. I love her. And, you know, I was thinking back, she's one that almost got away. I actually had a deposit on her. I actually sold her, and the guy backed out. But so I love carpet morphs. I think they're awesome. But it's like, you know, the Carmel stuff, it's all beautiful. But as a chondro guy, I start looking at this stuff, and it's like, wow, man, it starts to get a little bit confusing. But I kind of just stick with the Diamond Jungle Jaguars, you know, and the albino stuff I love too.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
cool.
That's cool. It seems like you're exactly right. Like when I first got into carpets, there was what, maybe five morphs. Now it's like, you know.
And it's cool. I love it. And I love them all. The super zebra. I do. I love all that stuff. But it's I just don't have the room. It's as simple as that.
Because
I love to work. I love the granite stuff, especially. I'm a huge fan of the granite stuff. You know, I just don't have the room for everything. So
I like the granites too. Now, if mine would only just breed, I'd be in friggin' business. I digress.
I think. And I know, being an IJ guy, this kind of hurts my heart a little bit, but the caramel granite stuff and caramel granite Jags, and they're going to be amazing. And they're going to be head turners. Because every time I have a caramel Jag head granite, and it's just head granite. And every time I open that tub, man, whoo, that thing just, I'm just like, wow, I can't believe that's here. You know,
who's going to produce them this year, Eric?
Who's going to produce them?
Anybody going to produce those animals this year, or are there?
Probably Paul and Ollie, but
okay.
Next year will be my year for those guys. So.
Gotcha. I'll look out for them because I'm always, you know, I love all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool stuff. Okay. What's your favorite snake in your collection? The one that, you know, that you always go down and gets that extra mouse, or, you know, you spend that extra 10 minutes looking at it. What's the one that does it for you?
Yeah, I can I cheat and have two? It's
sure.
Gotta be.
Yeah, there are no rules here.
Excellent. And then my F1 Prada Manaquari male, just so blue. You know, he's just such a pretty animal. And in a completely opposite direction, that Precision Diamond Jungle Jaguar girl I have. She's a beast. I mean, she's every bit of 7.5 feet, and she's just a monster. And she's coming up on 8 years old, I want to say, and she's as bright yellow and black as the day I got her. And she's just had her second clutch, and she just, you know, because I grew up with, you know, they were beautiful jungle carpets growing up, but every one of them, over time, they started to get all muddy and dirty on the dorsal, you know, dorsal area, along the vertebrae there. The yellow would start to muddy up with black scales, and that's what I love about these Diamond Jungle Jaguars is they just, man, they hold that coloration. So those two are, without a doubt, my favorites in my collection.
Okay. Now, with just real quick, on your diamond, you said you were breeding your pure diamond to... Diamond Jungle Jag. Where are you going with that project? What are you hoping to get out?
I had this similar project 2 years ago. I bred her Diamond Jungle Jaguar to an 88% diamond integrate, and I just produce 50% Diamond Jungle Jaguars. And please don't ask me to do the math, guys. What was it like? 50, whatever the hell they want to call them. They were 88% diamonds. The other 50%. I'm not sure how that all pans out percentage-wise.
Right.
But we'll call them 50%, 88% diamonds, and 50% Diamond Jungle Jaguars. And they were some smoking animals. Really nice stuff. So I'm hoping that because I used a pure diamond this year, the baby should even be that much nicer. So I'm just going for that wow factor. Honestly, they're just bright yellow and black animals, and I'll hold them back, and I'll send you pictures of these things, you know, assuming the eggs hatch, and I think you'll be pretty impressed with them in about 8 months. They're just pretty, pretty cool animals.
Yeah, that's another one in my collection. And you don't have any gamma stuff, right? Any gamma line stuff?
Any what now?
Gamma line?
Gamma? No, I don't have anything gamma.
So
no gamma,
so
no nothing, no diamonds, but pure diamonds are on my list.
Yeah, I just recently got a pair
of
pure diamonds.
Once you go on vacation, I'm going to get a pair mysteriously.
Anyway, my gamma jungle jag, diamond jungle jag, is definitely one of those other animals that, you know, it's just, wow, you can't believe it's that yellow. I don't know what it is about that cross, but, man. So you're saying your girl is going on 8 years old, and she still has that wow factor. That's awesome.
She doesn't look her best right now because she hasn't shed since she dropped her egg, so she's all covered, you know, like the dust from the cypress mulch. But,
sure.
Yeah, she's out of doubt. When people come down in my room, that's the first animal they look at because she's so big and she's so bright yellow. But I have a gamma female as well, and she's also a smoking animal, beautiful animal. She it's just that at least the ones I have don't get as big as the precision girls. See, I'm not sure what they were all outcrossed with, but man, just – beautiful animals, you know. They just look like they're painted, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Do you work with any other Morelia or have any other
No, man,
plans?
I'm such a one-trick pony now, guys. Chondros and carpets, and until I go out and do something stupid if you guys, you know, aren't there to take my phone call when I start to buy something.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pretty much, I see those two animals, you know, just kind of staying in my future. I mean, but you know what? If I was going to ever stray, man, I love those super dwarf, you know, lavender albino retics. You know, that's the kind of stuff I've been looking at lately. I love all that stuff. But so, listen, I'm like every reptile guy. I always, you know, do you guys do this? You ever make the list? Like, you know, you sit down, you write the animals that you want, the animals you have.
Kidding me, it's on my computer. It's updated
every
at least once a week. Yeah.
Like all of us mental patients. And it seems normal, right, because we all do it. But it's not normal, but, you know. Anyway, but yeah, so I'm always writing my list of stuff I want and stuff I have, and it just never ends.
Owen makes the short list and the long list.
Owen makes fun of me all the time because, I'm going to put it in his terms as there's a desk in the corner of my house, and at the desk is
lit,
a candle.
Only by candle, yeah.
And I go and I light it by candle, and I take out my quill pen and open up my parchment paper and write down my
large
list.
Very large, hugely large book. Well, he's wearing a brown robe, and all he does is scratch down what he's going to be getting in the next 10 years and what he's going to be breeding in the next 20. Yeah. So, and then we go to Owen, who goes, this one can go with this one because that's a boy and that's a girl, done. So, it's, you know, it's each his own, but, you know, I have the short list and the long list, and, like, the short list is, like, immediate things, like, I need a female water python because I have a boy water python. Like,
right.
The long list gets into funny things, like, Timor pythons might be cool one day. So, yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many business meetings I've sat down in front of clients with my, you know, notebook open, and I'm just supposed to be there like, for a meeting, and I'm just sitting down, 1.1 super dwarf lavender albino retic.
Yeah. I was in training at Columbus like a couple weeks ago, and around like the third hour of training, my brain starts to just fry. At that point, I'm sitting down and I'm like, 30 eggs from Trinity this year.
Yep.
20 eggs from blah, 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 equals this, equals profit, equals you need this. You know, it's, you know, various other things, and, you know, it beats doodling. So, yeah.
I know a reptile guy who doesn't do that. I really don't. It's we all do that, you know.
I have
a varying degree.
What I've done to try to curb my reptile, getting distracted and keeping on the goal is that I sat down, because I have this bad. I will do this really, really bad. And what I found that helped me is that I write it down on a copy book, right? So I go, I bought a copy book, and this is what I'm going to do in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2012, you know what I mean? And every time I strayed from that, I always end up screwing myself up. But if I stick to that, and I look at it, keep focused, you know, I stay on track. So now I'm at the point in my collection where I'm moving into my chondro phase. So,
oh, good.
I'm happy.
Eric, do you want to buy a chondro? I can't. Not till page 49. What?
You're a sick man, Eric. I just want you to know that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
everything you just
said
was not normal, but I'm just going to nod like a gentleman and pretend that we're normal. The same thing.
I'm going to call you out and say you have issues, but, you know,
I do because
I love you. It's all, you know, it's all within the thing. So.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like when I was dealing with, you know, carpet, when I back in the day, you know, I'm dreaming of owning these animals. And, you know, if I could eventually one day work with them. So flipping, you know, from species to species, oh, I want to work with this, I want to work with that. And I go and I would buy this. And for a while I had ball pythons, I got rid of them. Then I was into something else and da 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 da. And, I want to breed all these different kind of pythons. And, you know, I was like, you know, I'm spending all this money when I could have just went and bought the animal that I'm sitting there saying, oh, that's too much to spend for a snake. But rather than get the snake that I want, I spent all that money on snakes that I didn't want. You know what I mean?
So you could afford easy and quick, right?
Yeah. So just say, for instance, it's $1,000 for this snake, and I would go to, you know, the classifieds, and I would say, man, that's a lot of money for the snake. But meanwhile, I buy, you know, this snake is $200. This snake is $300. This snake is $600. And next thing you know, I spent over $1,000, and I could have had the animal that I wanted. So, you know, to sit down and kind of map it out, exactly what I wanted to do, and make sure the animals that I have for the pairing, and, you know, what did I want to create, and, you know.
I think that's important to do, Eric, is spend the money and get the nicer stuff, too, and get what you
mm-hmm.
want. Let's face it, you know, money is such a taboo in this hobby. People hate talking about money because they say, then it sounds, you know, then you're not doing it for the love of the animal. But that's, to me, I love the animals. I'm very, you know, passionate about what I do. But at the same time, it's also nice to know that the animals I produce, I can actually sell. And there's actually a market for, because it is an expensive hobby. Caging is expensive. Feeding them is expensive. You know, they take a lot of time. So, you know, the days of, you know, 10 years ago, you could, any snake you produced, you could sell quickly. Any carpet python, you could call Ben Siegel, he would take everything from you at a great price, a decent price. And now we all know the reality is that, you know, you got to spend the extra money to buy the nicer stuff so you can sell the stuff. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it just makes more sense. So
yeah, absolutely. Very cool.
Just remember that when you're buying chondros from me, more money, spend the more expensive ones, okay?
Yes. Pay for the bigger ones.
Right.
Yeah. I'm wondering which is going to be the more costly of the two. I'm wondering if my carpet collection is going to cost more or my chondro collection is going to cost more. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, man, I don't know. That's going to be a tough one. Because I'm like that. I'm the type of customer. I wish I had a customer that was like me. Because I just go, I say I want this snake, and I don't haggle with price. I just say, okay, that's the one I want. This is how much it is. Okay, here we go. You know.
All right, so everyone, if Eric approaches you about buying a snake, it's okay to raise the price on him. He'll pay it. So.
When I bought a snake from you, how did it go? Exactly like that,
right? Well, you approached for me about a high contrast. And I said, this is the price. And then you went away for 2 years, disappeared off the face of the planet. But everything else under the sun that was high-priced and whatever got me insanely worried that there's going to be this dude in Philadelphia that's going to put me out of business with his, you know, carpet morphs of amazing. Started a radio show. You and I talked, became friends. And then you finally bought the damn snake for $50 more than I originally quoted it at you. Because it had grown since then.
Right.
Yes, you paid the price, though.
2 years, but he paid the price. Yep.
Yeah. There was a long play, a two-year play, to not even bump it down in price. I mean, I didn't know what you were getting at there. So.
He was playing hard to get, Owen. That was
he was. He was. Yeah. So.
Remind me not to go car shopping with Eric.
Yeah, I know.
We like the Jeep, but we'll think about it and then don't go back for 2 years.
Yeah, I'm not good at that stuff, man. I'm not good at haggling, man. I'm not at all. Not at all. But
see, I feel bad haggling. That's why I send Chris to do that stuff. Because I know I'd be pissed if somebody came up to me and was like, I'll give you $50 for it. No, you.
I guess what I think is that, I don't know how you guys think, but especially, you know, with Morelia, probably more so with chondros than with carpets. But, you know, nobody thinks about the time that's put into getting that baby to where it is when you go to buy it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a lot of work to get that animal to that spot. And if that's what you say it's worth and I'm willing to pay it or somebody's willing to pay it, then,
I mean, ultimately, the customer, really determines the price, right? The demand really determines the price. But, you know, it depends on how bad I want something also. You know, I might, you know, I'll always say to somebody, hey, would you take this or would you pay for shipping, something like that? And if they say no, then, you know, then the ball's in my court. Do I want to pay it and get the animal I want or do I want to walk away? I don't know about you guys. Sometimes I see an animal posted and I just, like, pray every day the ad is gone. Like, somebody else buys it.
Yeah,
like
it goes away. Please,
somebody buy this damn thing, you know? So.
Yeah, or there's always that other thing that happens when, you know, you're waiting for a particular animal, You're like, oh, man, this is never, ever going to happen. I'm never going to find this animal. And then you go, okay, and then another animal comes along, and you say, and then you go and you get that animal. And then, like, 2 days later, the animal that you wanted comes up on the, you know, you're like, God damn it.
And I think that covers the overall theme of what we do. Moral of the story is that another animal always comes along. That's just the reality of it. You know? Might be a little different looking, might be different, but you know, another animal always does come up, always does come along that we're going to want. So that's, and I think that's a positive thing. I think that's a great thing. After all the animals we've all seen over the years and all the morphs and everything, there's still another animal that's going to come along that we're going to take our wallets out for. We're going to want. And I think that's what's so awesome about this hobby.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, true.
So Owen comes to his favorite part of the show.
My God, yes. The miscellaneous questions. Now, the questions that are made to make you think and dig deep into your inner herp nerd. So
2 hours ago, Owen, I was much sharper then, but okay, let's see what you got.
It's okay. It is right now. That's why we keep it for the end.
Okay.
What is your favorite locality of Chondro and why?
I'm going to have to revert back to my Manaquaris. I just love them, the high blue stuff. They're hard to come by, and they're pretty they pretty much consistently morph into high blue animals, and that's why I love them. They get big. The ones I work with, the bloodline, tends to be easy to get feeding, and they're very mellow animals also, so that they would be my favorite.
Okay. Now...
Did I win anything? Did I win
yeah, you get three snakes that Eric produces this year. Yeah, he doesn't know about that yet, though.
I'm going to haggle with him, by the way.
Exactly. He doesn't know how to haggle. So anybody who wants to buy something from Eric, slowball him. Anyway, so now the next one is, what will your next big purchase be?
Man, the one thing I can use in my collection is what we refer to as a super blue animal. And a super blue animal is, that's basically a chondro that in most cases was born red. It's a red neo that comes from a high blue line. And they usually go straight from their neonate color. So they usually go straight from red directly to blue. They don't go green, so... Marshall's got some great stuff. Mendez and Rico Walder always has great stuff, and Rich Culver. So I shouldn't let those guys know that I want to get one of those animals because it's not going to help my negotiating, but that's probably something I'd be after at this point.
Yeah, that would be...
I'm not going to ask Eric to help me negotiate that, believe me.
Huh. It won't help your negotiation skills, and I kind of want one of those animals now that you mention it, so I'm doomed too. Anyway, if you could have any python species besides Morelia, what would it be and why?
I would go with two animals I would just want. I love them, but I wouldn't have them just because of size. I'd go, I love those. I think they're called a lavender albino golden child.
The retics.
Yeah, that lavender albino, the golden child. I mean, those things are just amazing. They just get enormous. And I love granite Burmese pythons. I just love berms. And the granite phase, I just love them. So they didn't get so big. Those are the two animals I would definitely want that are non-Morelia.
Very cool. I know Eric's got I brought Eric into the second rogue snake room, and it's full of like scrubs and white lips, and he finds the one thing in the room, and that's my friend's Burmese python, and he's like, oh my God, look at the berm. I'm like, Eric, really? Like, over here is like patternless scrub pythons, and you're like, look
who
at the
cares?
Burmese. So, you know, yeah.
And it was
so
like
pretty.
Wasn't it a caramel or something?
It was a hypo caramel head leucistic. Or pearl or whatever, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man, this thing was beautiful. Oh, man.
I know those animals. I love those. Those hypo berms are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love that stuff. And I love those giant snakes. I mean, that's what kind of got me into this whole thing. I love them, but, you know.
Yeah.
I bring
him to show off all the other cool stuff, and he finds the one snake in the room that doesn't belong to me.
Right.
And he's like, look at this. I'm like, you son of a bitch. So, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
They are. Now, Greg, would you be a reptile show vendor or reptile show attendee?
I would definitely be an attendee. I'm definitely not a vendor. I used to vend many years back. I used to do, like, Hamburg when it first started, and it was a show in Staten Island and White Plains. But, no, I mean, I sell everything over the Internet. But you'll always see me tooling around, like, Hamburg show, the White Plains show, Tinley, the NARB show I've been to. And then I used to go, I went to the very first Breeders' Expo in Orlando, Florida, and I've been to a few of the Daytona shows. So I get around. I get to the shows. But just
cool.
Always cruise around, you know, buying stupid shit.
You'll have to go to the next Hamburg show because my plan is the next Hamburg show is on June 14th.
Okay.
And June 14th happens to be my 28th birthday.
Wow.
So the plan is... My plan is to flood Hamburg with as many Morelia people as I can to just come out, hang out, celebrate my birthday at a reptile show and have a good time. So
we just let our
we're going to start this campaign now. So
okay. I'm on
board. We're far enough in advance. Everybody just show up June 14th Hamburg reptile show.
We have to get you a gift point also, is that part of it or
Sure. Why not?
Okay.
Yeah, bring me something. I'll bring cupcakes or some shit. I don't know. Or I'll alcohol. Anyway.
Oh.
All right. So, Greg, if you could travel anywhere in the world without limitations, where would you go and why?
I would go to Alaska herping.
No, there we go.
You know what, man? I'm a lot older than you guys, and I got to tell you, at one time, I've been to Australia, not herping, but I just spent some time out there at my wife, our honeymoon, a couple weeks out there, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, what kills me is the bugs. That's what I hate, is just dealing with bugs and stuff. So if I was going to go anywhere, and what I would do, I'd probably just visit a lot of private collections. That's probably what I'd love to do, and I'd love to visit people who... Not even just Python people, but I'd love to get out there and visit some, like, high-end, at least like the tortoise breeders and the people who breed the harder to breed stuff, like the Euromastics and dwarf monitors. I mean, I just I just love seeing the setups these people have. I mean, they're just truly brilliant people. You know, they're accomplished breeders, and they just have a lot of success with, you know, perceived difficult species. So I'd love to just visit a bunch of private collections of people who just breed really difficult stuff, you know, who do it well. But if I was going to have to go travel somewhere and get eaten by bugs, I would probably go to like Cape York, you know, northern Australia. There, I'd love to see a Maruki chondro in the wild. That's probably what I'd like to do. Daniel Natusha territory.
Nice.
So
that would be cool. And I like the whole private collection thing going because. You know, some doing a whirlwind reptile tour around the United States would just kind of be cool seeing everybody's stuff. And then some of those other people, like you said, breeding the dwarf monitors and other species, they're really hard to breed. So those guys have to be so passionate and have to be so up on what they're doing. I mean, my friend that breeds blackthroat monitors, you know, he has to have almost... 3 feet of just straight up dirt and moss for them to burrow around and dig around. And even then they still don't breed if they're not in the mood. So,
And I love these guys. You know why? They're hardcore. They're not, it's nothing to do with money. They don't care if they sell a baby.
No.
They just love the animals. They want to just duplicate their, you know, environment as much as they can and just breed, you know? And I think I'd love to see some of these collections.
It's almost like the accomplishment all in itself is getting the eggs because then it's like, oh, my God, we got it, and that's what's very cool. So
you guys are close to Jersey. You know, something you may not know is that, you know, the very first guy to really breed bearded dragons is in New Jersey. His name was Ernest Hoffman, and he was in Millburn, New Jersey, and I went to his house many moons ago. It's the first time I saw, you know, the beardeds. And he kept them in his basement, and he just he had the windows that basically the way they opened up, they just opened up to outdoor pens in the backyard. He let the bearded outside during the day to sun, But, you know, stuff like that, it just really sticks with you. It's just amazing to see just the dedication these guys have.
Huh. That's
really
cool.
It is very cool. Okay. So I guess the only thing I got right now is, or left, is what is your website, email, and how can someone get in touch with you if they wanted to talk to you about a chondro or a carpet python or something
else? My childhood, whatever it is. Just go to my website. It's my initials. It's Gary Scavino. So it's gsreptiles.com. And, hey, like I said, I'm really passionate about these things. I want to make sure that if you're buying your first chondro, that you have a great experience in doing so. And, I love the animals. And, yeah, come check out my site. And if you have any questions, you can always – all my contact information is there, from my cell number to my email address. So that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Oh, man, it's been great great chatting with you, Gary. We'll have to do it again after you hatch out those babies and, get in touch.
Yeah, the pretty things.
Well, I'm going to look for you guys. Looks like I've got to go buy Owen a gift. I got to head out to Hamburg on June 14th. Doesn't sound like I have a choice now. So I look forward to
that. Female chondros are acceptable. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm writing this down, Owen. Okay, female chondros are good. Okay,
female chondro. If here's the problem. It's just the chondros are a side project, and the rules for side projects at Rogue are pairs or trios, no more, no less. So I have a pair. So I need another girl. If I get another boy, I'm screwed, because then I have to match him up, and there's too many chondros. So I can only get another girl.
Read between the lines.
I got to get some males telling me, because then it sounds like you might buy more females from me. So I got it.
No. See, that messes everything up. I break my own rules, damn it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, female chondros are tough. They seem tougher to come by now than ever, you know.
Yeah.
I think David Newman just had a nice female posted on Relief Ritus. It went pretty quickly, but,
He did. And I got lucky. Buddy contacted me because someone, he had a baby that was, a baby female that was sold.
Okay.
But apparently someone backed out. So Buddy's been helping me find a female for the male he gave me. So he just called me up and said, hey, this one was gonna go, but is now back with me. Would you want it? And I'm like, yes. So that's where my baby girl is coming from. Is again, Buddy. So,
Buddy's a rock star, man. He's a great guy. So you're in very good hands with him. So.
Oh yeah, when I go up to get her, I'm gonna bring Eric, and he can go through chondro school with me again. So,
yeah.
Just think of it as just a smaller carpet that hangs from a branch constantly and needs a little humidity. You guys will be fine. You'll be fine. Baby steps.
Baby steps, right. Yeah, baby steps.
All right. It's been awesome chatting with you. Like I said, we'll have to do it again. So
thanks for having you very much for the invite and all the best to you guys at your projects this year, and I look forward to meeting both you guys over at Hamburg.
All right.
Definitely.
All right, man. Have a great night.
You too.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Awesome. Great, great show. It's always cool to talk to people that are passionate but also have a sense of humor. I really dig that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it keeps the show light and fluffy. I always tell you, we don't want to have too serious of shows because then people don't want to listen to us. You know, it's so.
I think the perfect mix is to be able to get people to understand a serious concept, but in a light way. You know what I mean? I think it's all about that. You know, because you can. I don't know. I just think that that's an important thing. Otherwise, you're going to bore people and it gets too much. But, you know, even if you are trying to get in touch with your inner herp nerd, we have to put that on a T-shirt, man. That is definitely the quote of the year.
It should be Morelia Python Radio, getting you in touch with your inner herp nerd. I mean, yeah. Or Morelia Python Radio, no reptile hipsters allowed. I mean, yeah, just let's do that.
I love it. Oh, so good stuff. Yeah, I, you should definitely, if you haven't already, everybody out there in Morelia Python Radio Land should go and check out Gary's site. It's gsreptiles.com. You can see some of the animals that we were talking about, his facility. Really, really super nice. Maybe one day we'll have to take a trip up there on our Morelia Python radio road trips.
We should do those things. I mean, yeah, the Morelia Python radio road trips is something else we're working on. I, for one, am excited about the June Hamburg and think it's a cool idea to kind of flood it with Morelia people. I mean, every once in a while, having my birthday on June 14th, this isn't the first time a Hamburg's been the day of my birthday.
I thought
but
you were
going to
say this.
Care. What?
I thought you were going to say this isn't the first time my birthday's been June 14th.
Yes, I decided to change my birthday. No, what the hell is the matter with you?
Oh, man. Like, what
wait,
are you
can't
talking
move
about?
Those? No, no, it hasn't been the first time it's been on my birthday, but I think it would be cool to just kind of pack it in with a bunch of, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to go in and request off tomorrow. So
you should.
To,
you should.
Make that
fun.
Happen.
Then you
yeah,
can happen. Come and sell your own damn snakes. I mean, what?
Then I won't sell a one. You know?
You know, that is the thing. Every time you show up, none of your snakes sell. But if we send
right?
me with them, they all go. So I don't blame you for not going.
It's almost like it's like
I wouldn't do it either.
It's like I'm Kaiser Sose. You know, I'm like this imaginary guy that's made
imaginary
up.
Imaginary person. You can't talk about Eric's work. Yeah. It's funny because you came over to pick up your 2 year snakes yesterday, and my dad was actually here, and I'm like, oh, Eric's coming by. And he's like, Eric, who? I'm like, Eric the co-host. He's like, oh, I get to meet him. This is going to be great. I'm like, no, stop it. Easy, Dad. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things where if we're both in the same place together, pandemonium happens.
That is true. So, all right, let's run down our list and get the heck out of here. I don't know what next week's show is going to be yet because you're not going to be here. So I don't know what it is, and I don't want to
figure something out.
I got to
have something to listen to on my flight back and just see how horrible it is. I expect wonderful gleaming messages of how badly you miss me. So
yeah, it's true. I'm going to have to find somebody with just the right amount of humor. just the right amount.
Uh-oh. Yeah, humorous, jackass co-host wanted. Yeah. You should put a wanted ad up on the pick of the week and see what we get.
I'm going to see what happens. That'd be awesome.
Do it, please.
I'm not sure what's going to be the show next week, but I'm sure it's going to be similar to what Owen did when I was away, and I'll have a couple people on, and we'll just, talk about whatever. We'll talk about Owen, the fact
I don't want a complete show devoted to me while I'm not around. I guess you can say horrible things.
IJs or, you know, I don't know.
First topic, what asshole can't breed Aaron Jaya? And there's a whole round table. Oh, yeah, this might be bad.
So, yeah, stay tuned for details on that episode, and it should be good. Owen, you will find that it's pretty cool to actually listen to the show when you're not on the show, you know. Because
I wouldn't know what – I'm not going to know what to do. It's going to be so weird. Like, I'm going to listen to the intro music and then, like, start speaking to you as you're talking. And it's going to be like, no, he can't hear me. So
yeah, that's exactly what I did. I was listening to you and Rob and Scott, and you were talking, and when you guys were on, and I'm like, wait a minute. Oh, wait. And then you guys are just talking right over me. I'm like, wait.
How rude, you bastard.
Yeah, exactly. So, good times. So, yeah, I'll see something similar to that. So stay tuned for that. So, and then after that, once you come back, on the 18th, we have Kim Burge from Southern Condros. And then we're off to Carpet Fest. So.
Cool. Oh, my God. It's that soon.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's coming up quick. And then on the 20th, it will be me and you chatting up everything that happened at Carpet Fest and some other topics. And who knows, maybe we'll have some stuff to talk about. And then we're 2 weeks away at that point from having Richard Schein on to talk about.
Oh, yeah,
to talk about carpet pythons and all kinds of stuff. So should be fun. That show should be fun. So, oh, and get your water python questions together, and I'll take care of the carpet stuff.
First question, do you have any available females?
Yeah. Next question.
No. Oh, next question.
Let's see. We got, I'm going to go down the list, and then we'll get the heck out of here. So make sure you go over to the forum, the Morelia Python forum, www.moreliapythons.com. Don't forget, the new skin, or I should say the old skin, is up. It looks just like it used to look. It looks like there's some traffic going over to the site as of late. So definitely go over there and check it out. And if you're not a member, sign up and get involved. It's an awesome community. And Sean did a great job at getting everything back together. So always want to thank him for all his hard work and giving us our home base, so to speak. Carpet Fest. So like we said, we're weeks away. It's May 17th. It's in Waldorf, Maryland, hosted by our good buddy Howard Redding of Redding Reptile Breeders. You know, for information, updates, etc., you can check out the website, which I'm really having trouble with this website and the domain. It's really becoming a pain in the ass. But currently, it's www.homestead.carpetfest.com. So you can check that out. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter for updates. Deadline for the donations for the auction is April 30th. So if you want to get involved to help out Rico and help out US ARC, you know, by all means, get in contact with me. info@moreliapythonradio.com, or you can message me on Facebook. Either way, if you have something that you think people will like, you know, it's a great thing to get involved. And that's May 17th. And then we have the Northwest Carpet Fest, which will be July 26th. July 26th. So we got that going on. You can check out our website, www.moreliapythonradio.com, and see what we have going on. If you have questions, comments, topics, et cetera, you can email us at info@moreliapythonradio.com. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and go give our Facebook page a like. For all things Morelia, that's your hub, so to speak. And if you miss us live, don't worry about that. You can always download us for free on iTunes and listen to the show at your leisure. Don't forget to check out Gary's site. It's gsreptiles.com. And for me personally, ebmorelia.com. We have two clutches on the ground, one on the way. So pretty good so far for me. That's all I have. Owen, take us out.
Okay. What I say is Rogue will be closed next week. I won't be here. So if you are interested in a baby, let us know next week after when I return. Or you can get in touch with Chris Foley. His number is on our website, as well as help me forwarding any emails I get from people who aren't listening to him. Other than that, we have babies hatching very soon. They could actually be hatching while I'm gone. That'll be the Super Caramel Jag clutch, as well as one of our Corn Snake clutches that'll be done
probably in the next couple of days, either while I'm gone or the week after, if it's something you're interested, let us know. Other eggs to hatch. We got some red tigers cooking, and we have a few other clutches getting ready to be laid, including our high con tiger crossed with a tiger jag. So I'm not really sure what that's going to be, but if you see anything on our site that you're interested in, let us know. We'll put you on the list for babies. Babies are hatching. The next show that we have currently is the June 14th Hamburg Reptile Show, which I'm asking if you are into Morelia, come on, hang out. It's going to be fun. All right. What I'll say is good night, everybody, and I will not be here next week, but we hope that you do come back for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night. Wow.